Morning, members. I'd like to bring the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. Representative Hornstein, we've got the minutes of March 11th.
I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Discussion of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Members, we have one bill before us. House File 1394 is Representative Fabian's bill. It deals with the Citizens Board and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We've got a relatively long list of testifiers. It'll be real important to hear from all of them. So I think there's a good chance we'll be back later tonight. We have a room reserved. We'll see how it moves ahead. I know many of you, it's been a very long week. So we'll just have to see how it goes on whether we're back this evening or not. Representative Fabian, do you, let's see, we're moving this bill for possible inclusion.
No.
No, I'm sorry, it's, that's right, you've got some government operations stuff. We've got to move House File 1394 is going to GovOp. Representative Fabian, why don't you make that motion, then I believe there's at least one amendment, there's a technical amendment you have, and then there might be one more amendment you're supporting to get the bill in the shape you'd like. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would so move House File 1394 to
be passed and moved on to GovOps.
Okay. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Members, the A1, as I understand, is a technical amendment. Any discussions to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A1's adopted. I think the other amendment is actually not yours, Representative Fabian, but it's Representative Dill's, and you support it. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the A150159 amendment.
And Representative Dill, could you explain the amendment?
I will. If you look at the first, all relative to the first page of House File 1394, and on the page 1, line 13, it would strike knowledgeable and insert who demonstrates expertise. And if you're reading the amendment, it's pretty obvious that the intent of the amendment is to get additional expertise on this board, particularly on line 1 point, on line 14, where you strike a field, put in fields, and then after agriculture, insert timber and mining. And so the point of this, at least the first part of the amendment, is to get some varying expertise on the committee, or to assure some varying expertise on the committee. Then on line 1.5, it continues on that no more than half of the citizens on the membership of the board may be within the metropolitan areas defined by 473.121. And at least for the members of the committee, I think everyone understands what the amendment does, and stand for questions.
Discussion. Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I've made this point before on boards, and here we go again, where we're actually writing in more interests into this. I think a better approach would be breaking this out, excuse me, by congressional districts, so there's equal population on board. The second part, 1.5 to 1.7, raises the issue of where people live as being as important, if not more important, than their background, their knowledge of their skills and their abilities. And I think we've got to, as Minnesotans, move away from that. We need to be looking at representing Minnesota rather than representing an interest or representing a region. And I know that's hard, and I know that people disagree with that, but here we go again with division and dealing with the interest. I realize this is supported by the author and member on our side of the aisle, but I want to make that point.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I do support the representative's amendment and would encourage people to support it, members.
Any other comment to the Dill amendment? Representative Clark.
Just one question, and I just looked at it really quickly, but is there any reason, Representative Dill, that we couldn't have both knowledgeable and the other description you're having? Is there, I mean, couldn't they say both? Couldn't we keep both in them?
Representative Dill.
Maybe that's what excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
You go ahead, Representative Clark.
Is that what who demonstrates expertise is supposed to fill in for, or? I'm not sure.
Representative Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go ahead and take a vote on the amendment as it stated.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
No.
The amendment's adopted. Representative Fabian, if you want to now explain the bill the way it is as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also while I'm doing that, I would like to ask, I've invited a couple of people to be, I'll say, technical references for me with regards to the bill. Peter Larson and Tony Quillis have got some extra knowledge in this, but I'll get started with the bill while they're making their way down here. Members, first of all, what I'd like to do is, I want to be clear in this. We've had some discussions. I want to be very, very clear that I want clean air and clean water and clean land, and it's very important to all of Minnesota. Environmental permitting and review and reform and increasing efficiency at the MPC is nothing new for me. If you remember back to 2011, I was chief author of House File 1, we did a lot of stuff there. During that debate on House File 1, we were told we were going to lower standards and that we were going to have dirty water and dirty land, and we weren't going to be able to meet the deadlines that were in there, but obviously we did. And now I think that it's a piece of legislation that's kind of a model for reforming. That piece of legislation also... Well, I'll just move on here. And talk of modifying the Citizens Board really is nothing new around the Capitol. In 2012, the MPC did a report. MPCA did a report on some suggestions for that. What I've heard from citizens is they like having a direct contact with the MPCA and the MPCA Board. And in my opinion, this bill continues to place an emphasis upon that. And, the bill is bipartisan. Senator Scoia is carrying the companion bill over in the Senate. I've been working internally on an alternative, possible changes to the restructuring of the MPCA board and how it goes about doing its business long before this bill was done. And again, I want to be clear, this bill does not disband the Citizens Board. It keeps the 9-member board in place, which includes the commissioner, and allows for public hearings on environmental review and permitting issues. The commissioner would also have the authority to seek advice of the Citizens Board under this bill. That's not changing. It's a new path, okay, I admit that. It's a new path for citizen involvement, and it occurs earlier in the process on an EAW or a permit application or an EIS, possibly. And the threshold to trigger a hearing before the Citizens Board is really quite small, 25 signatures. 25 concerned Minnesotans can ask for the board to meet and consider their issues. Citizens can then have the board hear their concerns, and in turn, those comments can be used to further inform the permitting and environmental review process while it's underway, and the concerns can be addressed promptly. I believe that this would be more efficient than waiting until the EAW or the EIS or draft permit is essentially done, which is what's being done now. The permit gets completed, the EAW is there, and now we go before the Citizens Board. I think that if we brought those concerns to the Citizens Board before those documents were available, you could take a look at the draft permit, excuse me, not the draft permit, but the permit application or the draft EAW or the draft EIS, and then take those concerns to the Citizens Board. This has the potential, I believe, to shave anywhere from 30 to 60 days off of the timeline for some of these complex projects. Now, the Citizens Board, from my perspective, should continue to be involved in the rulemaking, which this bill guarantees. And the law is also quite explicit in how the MPCA must notify citizens about these matters that could come before the board. But I believe that the final authority on environmental review and processes subsequent to the issuance of permits should reside with the commissioner, as it does with all other executive branches, there is not another branch of government where a board has final say or final approval on the issuance of permits for EIS or EAWs. And again, I want to be very, very clear, okay? I want clean air, I want clean water, and I want clean land in the state of Minnesota. And any suggestion to the contrary, as my good friend Representative Purcell would say, is bull hockey. So, through the bill, Mr. Chair, in Section 1, we're making some changes there. We've taken the amendments in there. You can see the underlying portions there. Where we get to the real meat of the bill is in Subdivision 6, where we're crossing those issues out. But then if you go to page 3.1, the new language there, make final decisions on adoption or amendments of agency rules. Again, we're restating that the PCA board has the requirement for approval of those things. Rulemaking is fairly complicated. It requires a statement of need and reasonableness and all those things, and none of those things will be taken away from the board. On line 3.1, you can see that they would provide advice to the commissioner upon request of the commissioner. The commissioner can ask, but it does not limit the commissioner's ability to use the board. If you take a look at the back of the bill, there's a couple of repealers, subdivisions 7, 8, and 10 there. Those are being repealed and making some changes to subdivision 9. If you go to page 4 of the bill, the petition for public hearing, this is one of the issues that has come up. And again, a person may request that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's Citizens Board hold a public hearing by filing a petition that contains the signatures and mailing addresses of at least 25 individuals who reside or own property in the state, and then on the different following the different matters that can be there, environmental assessment, environmental impact statements, and so forth. And you can read through those. Line 4.27, 4.28, again, it talks about timelines. 30 days, so the Pollution Control Agency Citizens Board shall hold a public hearing within 30 days of receiving a petition under this subdivision. So that's, I believe that's something that is good for the citizens of the state of Minnesota. And let me finish. I think that this will make the net result is I think it's going to be a more active process. I think that staff is going to be able to be involved in these things when concerns are brought to the board. Highly technical people, lots and lots of technical decisions to be made. When the issues are brought before the board, if there's a permit application that's been brought forward or requested, filled out, if there is a request for a public hearing before the board, MPCA staff can be there. They can be listening to the concerns of citizens. They can weigh those things, and they can take those concerns into the next steps with regards to drafting a permit, granting a permit, or denying a permit. And in the end, the commissioner makes the final decisions. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will stand for questions. And
thank you, Representative Fabian. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian, I appreciate you going through the bill. That was very helpful. My question kind of goes to what's the need for the bill? What is the need? Where's the evidence that this type of change is needed? What do you see as the evidence that the board needs to change?
Representative Fabian, if you'd allow me the flexibility, what I want to remind members, there was an executive order by Governor Dayton. It's Executive Order 1132, and it states, the evaluation of environmental governance under Executive Order 1132 must include a review of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's Citizens Board's role in reviewing permits, environmental assessment worksheets, and environmental impact statements. The evaluation should include, but not limited to, an examination of the benefits and drawbacks of the board versus the agency commissioner making final decision on all or various subsets of permits and environmental reviews, along with how these matters are referred to the board versus the commissioner. Any recommendation must be reported to the chairs and ranking minority members of the Senate and House of Representatives committees having jurisdiction over environmental and natural resources. So that was sent to I guess I was chairing the committee then, or Representative Wagenius, I'm not sure. This is dated August 17, 2012, so I was chairing the committee then. We have a responsibility per the executive order from Governor Dayton to look at this. So to Representative Hansen, I wasn't sure, Representative Fabian, I was reviewing this again last night, and I wanted to make sure that members in the public knew who brought us here. Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I think that was helpful to get that out. My question is more so, what does that mean? From the evaluation, where's the evidence that this type of change is needed?
Well, thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. To that point, I would say for me personally, in the conversations that I've had with people who've been involved in the permitting process and so forth, that the timelines and the delays that result, and as per the report that was done by MPCA staff with regard to some alternatives, it consistently stated through there a couple of different times that by making changes to the board, you would expedite permits by roughly on an average of about 45 days. Permitting is timely, it's costly, it's technical. What I would like to be able to do is move the citizens board process earlier into the process so that from my perspective, I think it would speed up the process and it would make it more affordable. And I don't believe it's going to have any negative impact on the final decisions. I think it just expedites things and speeds things up. That's the reason for me doing this.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But Representative Fabian, some of the requirements for speeding up the permitting just went into effect, and I think we have another report coming this summer. So, I mean, we've, as you know, starting with in 2011, there have been a number of changes relating to permitting to streamline without losing environmental protections. So, you know, do you have data or any... any, again, I guess back evidence of why this is needed, number of projects or permits that have been delayed, or where's the need?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, again, kind of referring back to the report that the PCA did, I have the draft of the report, the final copy, but I've got it underlined in here where it says. Having a decision go before the Citizens Board can add an average of 45 days to a project timeline. Okay, so that's the data that I have. And Representative Hansen, it's stated in here. Here it is again on page 4. Benefits remove an average of 45 days off of a project timeline. So that's what I'm basing my timeline information on. And I don't know if Mr. Quillis has something to add to that. I know he's been very involved in these things. Or Mr. Larson.
Mr. Quillis, comment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank you for the time this morning, and I will be brief because I know you've got some citizens here that have traveled a while. I'm here every day, and I'm willing to come back later today, Mr. Chairman, or this evening as needed for questions. But, Mr. Chairman, I have personally been involved around this debate on the PCA board, and I'll date myself. I used to have hair on my head when I came to work in this building in 1984. And so this debate on the Pollution Control Agency board has been around since then, if not previous to that. And there has been discussions on whether the board is needed, because it is the only board around that I know of that Commissioner Zelli at the Department of Transportation doesn't have to answer to a board. Commissioner Fredrickson at the Department of Agriculture doesn't have to answer to a board. Director Erlinger over at the Department of Health doesn't have a board that he has to answer to. So when we look at government structure, it's kind of one of the issues that kind of stands out and has been part of debate of just government reform over the years as we've gone through it and looked at it. And in part of that, we've even been part of, and I think Mr. Larson's going to be able to give a really unique perspective on how this has happened from inside and outside, but whether or not the commissioner should be part of the board, whether or not the commissioner should have a vote, and whether or not he should just be there ex officio, whether the board over the years has had decisions whether or not they should be involved in personnel decisions or not. So this debate and how they should be involved, whether they should exist, and how they should be involved in the operation of the agency has been around for a long time. And options have ranged from whether getting rid of the board to strengthening the board, or some sort of hybrid, if you will, on how that works. So, Mr. Chairman, I look at it from the perspective of, as the governor said during his first term in 2000, whatever it was, he wants his state agencies, specifically his environmental regulatory agencies, to operate at the speed of commerce. And we want to try and help him, as Representative Fabian referenced, to go through, and we've done on a bipartisan basis, to gone through and work with the agencies to go through Department of Agriculture, Pollution Control Agency, Department of Natural Resources, to try and speed up the permitting process, if you will. We've set timelines and goals for those agencies that they have been part of. We've talked about the reports that Representative Hansen had just referenced. We did two of them a year. Now we're going to do one of them a year, and I think we've did that now down to August to go through. And the agency has been doing a good job in trying to meet those goals that we have set forth for them. They've broken it into tiers now, tier one, tier two. But there are always outstanding issues that come up and when we go through this. So the one thing that my conversations with the commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency and staff on successful projects that go through and don't take a lot of time, cost a lot of money, and the one thing that really bothers the business community is that uncertainty. When you go through and you commit the time and the cost, that at the end of the process there's going to be a decision, that uncertainty always worries the business community, if you will, Mr. Chairman. So to try and the best ones that go through that address that time, cost, and uncertainty are ones that involve the public early on. The public engagement early in the process, the better. And to let them know where it's at and how it's going, we think is a very good process. Representative Fabian's bill, we think, does that. Moving House File 1394, moving the board earlier into the process and letting them get involved, go out actually into the geographic area where the region, where the project or permit or environmental assessment worksheet is going to be affected. Let the public input go through. We think is a very good thing to go through and get the public early on involved in the process. And Mr. Chairman, we think that is a good part and a good change that which should move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Next, I'd like to hear from Mr. Peter Larson. Mr. Larson, as a former commissioner of the MPCA, thank you for taking my invitation to testify today. I thought it would be important to hear from former commissioner. And before that, Mr. Larson, Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair and members, I want to make it clear that Mr. Larson is here at my request. I've asked him to come. I think he has a vast wealth of knowledge in this area, having been in the position that he's in. So that would be,
well,
I just want that to be clear.
Representative,
and I know
Fabian,
you wanted to be here.
It's now on the record that we have both asked him to be here, so that's good to know. Mr. Larson, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, Peter Larson, the Larkin Hoffman Law Firm. I'm not here for any of my clients. I'm here to provide some input into an important discussion. So I actually appreciate the opportunity to be here. Just as a bit of background, we're going to be talking a little bit about some language that I actually wrote. I guess it means you've been around here for a while, that you were here probably at this very table talking about how this language should be adopted. And now I'm here to talk about deleting language, and I'll tell you a little bit about that.
Mr. Larson, can I clarify? Are you referencing the language in 1967 that created the MPCA Citizens Board?
I was not even 10 yet. I won't tell you exactly, but no.
So for
but I was alive, which is different than some of the people.
So the folks that are listening and didn't hear it because of the laughter, I was asking if the legislation you were referencing was the creation of the Citizen Board in 1967, and you said that clearly was not what you were going to talk about.
It was not. I was a young boy at Cleveland Elementary in Fergus Falls at that time.
Well, good for you. I never knew that's where you started. That's good to know now. Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just as a bit of background, I was at the Pollution Control Agency in the 90s under Ernie Carlson. I was the assistant commissioner for a couple years. I was deputy for a year and a half, and I was commissioner for 2.5 years. And I staffed the PCA board for a couple years as assistant commissioner and deputy, and then I was the chair for 2.5 years. And I've been practicing law ever since. I just have a little background for folks. Like I said, I'll get into it, but I worked on this back in the 90s when some of the changes that are in law were made. And it's interesting, I think, to note that in 67, the agency was created when there was lots of agency changes going on. It wasn't just the PCA board. I think it was the Levander Commission, for those of you who remember that name, that talked about how government should be structured. The PCA board was created, I think, about that time as part of that. There was a Water Pollution Control Board at the Department of Health that was the predecessor, and you'll see that if you have all of 116. I heard some comment around here that was the predecessor to the Citizens Board, and I didn't know that, and I looked it up last night. And it's true that the PCA was the successor, but the Water Pollution Control Board had a couple citizens on it, but it was mostly agency heads. At the time, they were executive directors or something. And then there was a advisory board geographically appointed to that board. They were just really figuring out how to handle wastewater at the time. There was 7 wastewater treatment facilities discharging into Lake Minnetonka in 1970, just to give you a sense of what they were facing. Moving forward quickly, EPA was created afterwards. The Minnesota Environmental Policy Act, which created environmental review in Minnesota, was created afterwards. NEPA, the Federal Environmental Review Law, afterwards. Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Superfund, RCRA. So the PCA board was created when there was really virtually no law. There was some law, but as we consider it now, none of the modern laws existed. And I want to note before I talk a little bit about the board that I spent a lot of time and known a lot of people that served on the board, and I consider some of them really important public servants in the state of Minnesota. Dr. Dan Foley, I'll just pick out as one. He's served since the 80s. I think he might even predate Tony Quillis's time up here, and he's still on the board. He's a medical doctor. He's an emergency physician, and folks like them deserve a lot of credit. So I'm not here in any way to criticize the citizens that have served on this board. I looked back, and I think this got handed out to you. PCA website has the agendas for the last couple years on it, and you can go back farther than that. I just went back 24 months, and I think you have this in your packet. I went back and looked at the agenda and looked at the items that they've had on the agenda since March 2013. I counted 35 agenda items. There were 8 environmental review decisions and permit agenda items. There were 6 projects in that 24-month period for which decisions were made on permitting or environmental review out of the 35. So that left 27 items on the board agenda that wouldn't be affected by this bill. And I think it was actually 5 or 6 months. I think it was 5 months. So in 2 years, 5 months, agendas would be affected by the bill. The agency's agenda would not be impacted other than those 5 months. They would still do rulemaking. They'd still be doing the informational items that they did. They did 1 SDS water quality permit, which is not a federal permit. It's a state permit because it doesn't involve a discharge. They did 1 NPDES permit, which is the federal permit because it involves the discharge. That was for a Perham resource recovery facility. They did 2 air permits, 1 for the University of Minnesota and 1 for an ethanol plant. They did 2 EIS adequacy decisions. Both decisions were that the EIS was adequate. They did 1 positive declaration on an EAW, which has been discussed a bit around here, and that was on a dairy. And then they did 1 negative declaration on an EAW, because I wanted to know what I was testifying about a little bit, what would have been impacted the last 2 years. So I went through and again, I think you have that. I won't go through it, but I just did that preparation.
Mr. Larson, we do have it.
Okay. So from my perspective, I've sat on both sides since I left the agency. I've been in private practice, and this is why I think this bill makes some sense for you to think about. The public comes in to a PCA board meeting when it's at the very end of the process. The public comment periods have been completed, and responses to all the public comments have been prepared. Final permits are ready for issuance that day in that meeting, and most of the time they are issued. EAWs have been worked on for months or even years with the PCA staff, public comment periods, responses to public comment periods. EISs have been completed over years. There's, I think, three times where there's a public comment period on an EIS. The attorneys for the agency have reviewed the record and shown that issuing the permit is justified according to the record and all the applicable laws. And the staff and the commissioner have completed their work to recommend to the board that the environmental review and permitting is done. So it's not a very high leverage point for the public to come in and try to influence the process. And a project proposer, maybe this is a little bit responsive to Representative Hansen, a project proposer comes in and having spent, if it's a big project, potentially years planning, paying consultants, meeting with the agency, going through public comment periods, seeing responses to comments, if it's an EIS, it's certainly taken years. And then they're sitting in the back of the room after all that, and the citizens board and the staff are talking among themselves and might change the permit and might make a decision right there. And it's a difficult thing to sit through. And I can say, Representative Hansen, another thing that happens is when people do due diligence of projects, they ask people to do a chart. What's it going to take to get this project done? And when I've been involved in that PCA board process is the toughest to describe. Normally they've never seen it before, and you can't tell them how long it's going to take. And I had one circumstance where someone said, well, it's very interesting that you know so much about this, and I was working with another lawyer, and you guys seem like you know how you could get this done, but I don't even have to do that in the other state I'm thinking about. So that's not every day, but I can tell you, just taking off my PCA hat, putting on my hat I wear now, that's a circumstance. So just to conclude, Representative or Mr. Chair, it seems to me that you should seriously consider moving the PCA process earlier. It's a much higher leverage point for citizens if they want to actually influence the process. Whether you should leave the rulemaking in place, I was thinking about this last night, and I thought if the commissioner now had rulemaking authority and there was a bill introduced to take that away from him and give it to a citizens board, I'm not sure that wouldn't be controversial. So I think it makes sense not to touch it, but I'm not sure that there's a low controversy way to say there's perfect way to do it between the commissioner and the board. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Larson? Seeing none, I'm sorry. Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein, is it for the testifier?
Well, yeah, I mean, actually for...
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's somewhat based on Mr. Larson's comments, but then also a comment that Mr. Quillis made. They're very much related. And, you know, Mr. Quillis was concerned about certainty for business. And, you know, I find that a little puzzling because if there's one thing that's certain, based on the record of the Citizens Board and the PCA, it's that they're going to get their permit. And I don't know if either the author or someone can tell me how many times the PCA has actually turned down a permit, the Citizens Board. I count maybe a couple. I mean, I think there was a feedlot at one time. There was that Dakota County project that I described before. But how many times in the history of the PCA has the Citizens Board turned down a permit for a major project? Would Mr. Larson or someone know the answer to that?
Representative Hornstein, the next testifier, I have one other representative that has a question at this time. The next one I was going to bring down was MVCA.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure they nodded no to your question, so I don't know if that meant they didn't know or if it had never done. So I'm a little confused in the nodding that was taking place in the audience. So I think we're going to need them to come down and clarify what the nod meant.
And that Representative Hornstein. So, Mr. Chair, so that would be helpful, I think, to know because, you know, that's one thing that's been looking at this from the other side, you know, having, you know, challenged some of these permits. You know, there's frustration that that there isn't a more, you know, scrutiny of these. So, you know, you can look at the Citizens Board from both sides on that. But I would be really interested to know how many times the Citizens Board has actually turned down a permit.
Representative, Mr. Larson, looks like maybe you thought.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I can tell you that's extremely rare. But what I was going to mention, and this falls different ways with different people, but that's the same. That's true with the PCA staff. You know, people come in and propose projects; they normally go forward. It's just a matter of whether they get changed along the way. So I'm not sure that either the PCA staff or the board very often says you can't have a permit. It's just a matter of what the permit's going to say when it's issued.
So Representative Hornstein.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair. So that's where I think that, you know, I'm a little puzzled by this statement that there's this high degree of uncertainty that people are feeling about this permitting process. Because I think if there's one thing that is certain, you know, most people who want a permit get that. And, of course, a permit is a permit to pollute at a certain level or not. But that's what it is. And so, you know, I'm just a little puzzled by that.
Representative Hornstein, I just, two things. You might be building a case for why we don't need them if they're going to get the permit. And I would say in some cases these permits actually are saving us pollution. They may be an alternative way of doing something that's going to replace current practices that are causing more pollution. So where it may be a permit to allow some pollution, it may save more pollution than it creates. And I don't even like using that word, but Representative Horns.
And well, to that point, I mean, one of the reasons I feel strongly about keeping the Citizens Board and keeping it the way it is that, you know, oftentimes this does provide more transparency in this process. And it is it is important to look at the specifics of the permit itself. But, you know, you have an open opportunity for citizens to, you know, participate in a full, transparent public hearing, or two, depending on the project. And so, you know, I would never advocate for not having a citizens board for that reason. So,
Representative Fabian,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, oftentimes in this discussion that we have, the business community is who's at the table. Okay, and those are the things that we hear about. But the reality for me where I live, I don't hear a lot from businesses. Where I hear it from is cities who have complex projects put together. So anytime you add, let's just say hypothetically, 45 days to the process, that's an additional expense. That's an additional time that's added to the length of a total project. If you're doing something that's complex and you're replacing your sewage lagoons in northwest Minnesota, our construction season is very short to begin with, just because of Mother Nature. So anything that we could do to speed the process up, to create that efficiency, I think is a benefit. And there, Representative Hornstein, I admire and respect your concern, you know, that you're expressing. But I personally, I don't see anything in my bill that is jeopardizing the input of the public. In fact, I think it makes it even more, it makes the decision in the end cleaner. It takes out that stuff that negotiating at the very end of the process that may be going on between the proposer, the staff, and the board.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks. We could move on. There's other concerns.
Thank you.
But.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. I just have a quick comment about the bill. Representative Fabian, thank you. Sincerely, thank you. I was reading this bill on page 4, 4.27, section C, where we start here. You have brought this bill to the public where you require that these meetings need to be held in the location where it's going to be effective, and that you're actually bringing it out there where we have to face the people that are going to be affected by this. I can't thank you enough for having this provision in this bill. Far too often, our government, our agencies, and our boards and the components thereof. They meet down here in St. Paul. They meet during the week. They meet in the mornings when it's almost impossible to get down here because most of us work. Very few people have time to drive down here Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. from Greater Minnesota to sit and listen to decisions that are being made that are going to affect their homes, which are hundreds of miles away. And you have brought this out to these where we actually have to face the people that are going to be affected. I want to say thank you very much and good job on this section of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to bring forward Michelle Beeman, Deputy Commissioner, MPCA. Welcome, Commissioner. If you could identify yourself for the record and then give us your testimony. That is a low chair. You might want to switch it. I knew former Commissioner Larson wasn't very tall, but I thought he really, really looked short there. So thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Michelle Beeman, and I'm currently the Deputy Commissioner at the Pollution Control Agency. And I also should, might as well say up front, I also am a former member of the board. When I was not working for state government, I was appointed by Governor Pawlenty to serve on a term for 4 years, and I was confirmed by the Senate. And so I have a perspective of having been a board member and now being Deputy Commissioner, and I do staff the board during the board meetings, so I am part of the process now, even though I'm not a member of the board. As you recall, when the commissioner was here presenting before on the budget, the overview, he did do an overview of who the current board was, and at that time expressed his strong feeling for the value of the board as it is currently constituted as part of the decision-making of the agency on certain matters. So I'm here to express the agency's opposition to the bill because it does, at this point, fundamentally change the nature of the agency as it's structured by taking the board and making it an advisory body instead of a decision-making body. It's obviously up to the legislature how you want to structure your agencies and the authority of the agencies and the decision-making, but this has been the way the PCA has been constructed for 48 years from the beginning, and we believe, yes, there's ways that it could be modified, and yes, this has been debated on and off over the years, but fundamentally it works well for those matters that are highly controversial or complex, where there's public visibility and a need for dialogue with the decision makers of the agency. Just to set a little bit of context, again, to be clear, the vast majority of the permits and other environmental review decisions that PCA makes are done outside the board. The commissioner makes decisions on permits, staff make decisions on permits all the time. As some of the data that you've been presented show, there's a very, very, very small number of actual matters before the board. And some might say, well, then why have the board if it's that small a number? Those tend to be the projects where there's localized controversy in the community or concern from neighbors of the community about that particular proposal. It could be that it's highly visible or it's been a long-standing issue. And those are the situations where community members, the public, and the proposer want to be in front of the decision makers at the time they're making that final decision. It's also at the point in the process where, yes, the permit has been very well developed. The staff present that to the board with lots of technical information. They've been working with the project proposer for a while. Hopefully, the proposer has been working with the community. That is not always the case, though. I would say my personal experience on the board is that some of those matters came before the board because there had not been dialogue, and the community was very confused or concerned about what exactly this permit was going to allow or what the environmental worksheet was saying about the project. And it was only when there was able to be that forum, that dialogue and questions, and the board was able to ask questions to pull out more information, that we were able to forge a final solution, a final resolution through the vote on the permit or the EAW. It's that kind of back and forth discussion and probing from citizen members, not experts, you know, on every possible range of technical topic of the PCA, but well-informed professional citizens who are there asking the questions and probing, that really gets to a final resolution that hopefully then is satisfactory enough it will not be challenged. One of the questions and concerns I hear come up is the delay factor, and a couple points on that. Yes, coming to the board takes a little more time than if the commissioner were just giving up on something. But though, whether it's the commissioner deciding or the board, that legally is a final agency decision that can be appealed. It's hard to know how many of these matters would have been appealed by one party or another to court and on and delaying that way if we weren't able to reach a resolution and modify the final outcome at the board meetings. So while there might be a short delay up front, I can't tell you because I don't know what wasn't challenged because we were able to resolve it. But I know that there were a number of matters that both when I was on the board and now sitting in the last few years where we made changes, the board made changes based on input in the meeting that then added something to a permit or changed something that then there was no further challenge. So I think those are things you have to balance when you're looking at that. Another thing, I'm not quite sure how this bill would avoid the same sort of 45 or 60 day delay when you still have provisions for public hearings. If the board, if it's advisory even, is being requested to have a public hearing out in the community, that's going to add more time right there before the commissioner can make that final decision. So that's still helpful in the sense that there would be public dialogue, but I'm not sure it's getting at any sort of quicker slicing off of time for permit and environmental review decisions. I'm not sure how much time you want to allow me, Mr. Chair, but I would just say that...
You're doing fine. Go ahead,
Commissioner. Of the variety of topics, as Mr. Larson was noting, and I think as Mr. Coulis was noting, really, there is not any particular sector, there's not even any particular geographic area that the board gets involved with. We've had permits and environmental review decisions in wastewater and mining and landfills and remediation and some feedlots. Until today, I thought that largely the prompting of this concern was one decision by the board related to the dairy. This is also about sort of an EQB review of improvements to the board. I think there are other areas we could go into. But we went back over just for information's sake the last 8 years, and we found a pretty even distribution at about an average of eight permits or so a year, and about 10 environmental review decisions a year. So again, it's not the vast majority of work that the chamber might be concerned about, and that project proposals are still taking place through the normal agency channels with staff and with the commissioner deciding. But again, things like the 3M. PFC contamination problems. That was something that came before the board a couple times. I happened to be on the board at the time that we were dealing with that. It was very of much concern to the community about what those PFC contaminations were doing in the community. What was the PC going to do about it? There was a day-long meeting that was all about the consent order for the 3M and the agency. Those are the kinds of things where transparency and citizen access to their government decision-making is very important. The agency feels it's important. The commissioner feels it's important to allow a viewing into how decisions are made about that. If there had just been backroom discussions and then, here's a consent order to 3M, I don't know how the community would have accepted that or would have understood some of the technical nuances. When I was a board member, one of the things I felt was important for me to do was to ask questions of the staff who were there in terms that the citizen community would understand better. Because, yes, these are highly technical matters. Parts per billion of this and limits of this for an air permit. And it can be dense. It is dense. And I think it's challenging for citizens and community members sometimes to understand exactly what does that mean. What is the mercury here and what is the methylization here? Part of what I think good board members do is become that translating bridge. And in the context of the board meeting, ask the questions in terms and try to get simpler answers. As much as I love the staff, they can dive down into the weeds pretty quickly. Try to bring them up to a level that is understandable. And again, I think that helps bring confidence by the citizens in what PCA does, because we do work in a regulatory area that sometimes is very hard to understand, and especially when we are allowing pollution, so to speak, through these permits. People don't always understand, what do you mean you're letting this go out into the air or the water? So I think the board does a helpful job there as well. It's unique, I agree. No other agency has this. Other states, they do. Wisconsin has a board that oversees DNR and PCA type of regulatory work. But I think because of the nature of the things that we regulate, these are important issues that touch communities in a different way than other parts of different agencies do. maybe DNR should have a board, I don't know. But for us, we do think it helps with the confidence and the citizen and access and transparency to the board. So for those reasons, we don't think that this makes sense at this time to change the structure for the PCA that way.
Well, thank you, Assistant Deputy Commissioner. Apologize. Mm-hmm. Commissioner, I've got to ask. I think it's very good that your testimony was on the tape and on TV. And I would encourage the agency to go back and watch your testimony. But I'm going to paraphrase. You just did the best possible testimony for support of Representative Fabian's bill that we could possibly have heard. It involves localized controversy concerns where you want to make a pitch with lots of technical information, citizens, not professionals, appeal a decision on just where some business, or this was my point. So this, what the net effect of what happens is the business just up and goes somewhere else to a different state. Make changes based on the input from the board. It's a board of citizens, not professionals necessarily, not scientists. These are citizens that you're saying can react on emotion instead of fact. You talked about the complexity and mercury levels and whatever that meant. I don't know. You lost me. It was something else. Dive into the weeds about how the agency can dive into the weeds. And now we're going to go and let emotion dictate what happens instead of an agency with 900 employees with some of the most talented people that can come with us. We heard, I think it was last week, actually the week gets long around here, it may have been earlier this week, from a number of environmental groups testifying how the importance of science and making sure that we don't follow emotion and that we follow science. Thank you for your testimony, and I would strongly encourage folks to listen to what you just said and put it in the context of this bill. I wanted to make one other point. You mentioned this handout of where all the decisions are, and you're right. There's a number of decisions across the state, and this isn't about one particular decision. It also notes, members, and it notes what were the industries that were involved in the decisions from 07 to 14, and then it also says the location by counties, and it's a darker blue are all the different impacted counties. It also lists the eight board members. There's currently one unfilled position, and I'll note that one unfilled position is the one required to be a representative of organized labor. So, Deputy Commissioner, thank you for your testimony. I strongly encourage you to listen to it, because I got to be honest, you just gave the best reason for why we need to look at this, because it is about emotion and not about science and fact and reason. So thank you. Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, since you are interpreting my words in this
no,
way.
No, Commissioner, I encourage you to go back and watch the tape.
I will do that. But I just want to make one point. When I say that there are changes that can be made at the board meeting, I did not mean to suggest or imply that board members are writing the permit or writing the technical pieces of that. What I'm saying is that in the discussion that takes place when staff are there, issues come up, questions are raised, that then give direction back to the staff to think about how is this addressed in the permit, how might this be changed in the permit, and the technical staff are the ones that deal with that and deal with the science. There's not just insertion by citizens into the technical documents that are done. What is raised are the questions and the concerns from the citizens and the board members that the staff then take and work with the project proposer, often that same day, to come to a common ground in the final work product.
Thank you.
I just don't want that misunderstood.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just we've had a couple of references to the fact that this is the only board in state government. And, you know, I've counted at least four, and there may be more. I mean, obviously, Bowser is a board. That's in the name. But you have the MAC, you have the Met Council, you have the Public Utilities Commission. So this isn't necessary. You know, we're treating this as it's some sort of outlier, some sort of very unusual structure within state government, and it's not. And I would argue that in the case of all of those that I mentioned, as well as the PCA Citizens Board, it is absolutely critical. You know, they're not comprised of experts, but it is they all play a similar function, and that it's absolutely critical because this is a place, a point of entry for the public in a very open and transparent way at a decision-making level. And so that's why, you know, keeping things the way they are is actually, you know, the best outcome, I think, for public involvement and public participation. And I wanted to just ask, because I still haven't got an answer as to how many permits the Citizens Board has denied, either in its history or in recent history.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, I am not aware of a full denial by the board, at least in the 8 to 9 years we've looked back. There may have been one where it was part of a rescind and reissue. There are changes to permits, but I'm not aware that the board has just flat out denied.
Commissioner Beaman.
But I could, I said I haven't exhaustively searched every decision in the last stretch of time.
Commissioner Beaman, I think Representative Hornstein might be asking, is there any reversals of a recommendation from staff that the Citizens Board made in the history of it or in your involvement?
Mr. Chair and members, in terms of a reversal, again, the dairy decision that was last August was a reversal. It was a vote against what the staff recommendation was. The staff recommendation was for a negative declaration, and the board voted to go forward with further information in the EIS. That is the only decision that we looked at again in the last 8 years or so that was, I would say, opposite of what the staff recommendation was in the final outcome.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. So one in 8 years. Yeah. And then the other issue that I think Representative Fabian is trying to get at relates to environmental review. So are there instances where the board has decided to do an environmental awareness worksheet where one was not requested, or upgrading from an environmental worksheet to an EIS? How many times has the board, let's just take those separately, do you know or can recall a time when no environmental review for a project was envisioned and then the board ordered an EAW?
Commissioner Beaman.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of an example, but again, I'd want to go back and look at the numbers.
Okay, and then Mr.
Representative Hornstein.
One last one. So then, are you aware of a time when a project had an EAW, and then the board said, "Well, we don't think that's a high enough level of scrutiny, so we are ordering an EIS, a full EIS for a project." How often has that happened,
Commissioner Beaman?
Mr. Chair, members, again, I'd want to verify that, and we can certainly get back to you very quickly. I think there may have been one, but it may have been where the staff were also recommending an EIS for various reasons, and the board agreed with it. I believe the dairy decision was the only one where the board disagreed with staff. I'd have to verify if there was one where staff recommended an EIS. It probably was once or twice at most.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Representative Horns.
That's helpful, and you know, just beginning to think as I hear your testimony and read the bill, that we're looking at this is a solution in search of a problem, because we don't have permits being denied on a regular basis. We don't have environmental review being ordered on a regular basis outside of, you know, the parameters of the staff recommendation. So, you know, again, I'm puzzled by the need for this, and again, this somehow this notion that creates so much delay and uncertainty for both the public and private sector who are going before the PCA.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Beaman, welcome. I want to go back to the executive order that the chair referenced and that the author has referenced. And was that, in talking about a 45-day delay, that was a result of was a draft EQB study? Or when were the results published from that? Or was it before we did the reforms last year that haven't quite fully taken effect yet?
Commissioner Beaman, if you don't have that on the tip of your tongue, you can get back to us. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, yeah, only this morning was I made aware that there was some reviewing of these reports. The draft I have in front of me, I don't know the exact timing, was a September 2012 draft. with some alternative analysis of EQB and PCA Citizens Board. How that fed into changes that were made in the, with the legislature next session, I don't know the timing of that. And it really was driven by the EQB's analysis, not PCA's own analysis of this, so that we'll have to check also with some EQB staff on that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important to look at context when we're citing the reports, because we're not in the fall of 2012 anymore. We're in the spring of 2015. I do want to respond back to kind of the perception of citizens running wild here at a meeting. I just was looking at the folks who are on the board, and we've got a PhD in water resources with an MS in soil science, an adjunct University of Minnesota professor in agronomy and plant genetics, so that's one. We have a physician with an expertise in toxicology. We have an immigrant background from Vietnam with a BA from Yale and an MA from the U of M in international relations. We have someone from the Duluth Transit Authority, a business, international business, a farmer with soil and water conservation district expertise, and then a PhD, MSc in environmental engineering and water chemistry with a BS in soil science. Doesn't sound like citizens running wild to me. It sounds like folks with a science background who are there to represent Minnesotans and apply what they know and be doing it and do it in a transparent manner. And Ms. Beeman, just maybe could you give your background when you were a Governor Plenty appointee? What's your education and expertise?
Commissioner Beeman.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. My background is that I have a law degree and a master's in environmental studies. I came to Minnesota to join the Attorney General's office initially back in the early 90s. I also had clerked for courts before that. And I was representing the DNR when I was within the Attorney General's office and represented them on a wide range of natural resource litigation matters and others. I then moved into the Department of Natural Resources as their legislative director during the Ventura years. So I had the expertise of policy there. And then I had left state government when the change of administration happened then, and I was working for the Nature Conservancy as their conservation director for Canada programs at the time that Cheryl Corrigan was the commissioner of the PCA at that time, and they were looking, they had a vacancy on the board, and she approached me because of my familiarity with the legal and policy issues, and because they didn't have an attorney on the board at that time, and they thought that would be helpful for a lot of the administrative process and procedures. And so the governor chose to appoint me. I did go through an interesting confirmation hearing in the Senate that year and was sat on the board for 4 years. Then when I took a job as the environment director at Dakota County, I actually just resigned from the board because I thought there might be too many potential conflicts in my role.
We're going to begin with the testifiers, and I think we've got most of the outstate ones. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just a minor issue with the new language on page 4 to the author on lines 31 and 32. The commissioner shall publish the notice in a newspaper of general circulation. That tends to be the kind of language that we're changing in some bills because it doesn't provide, the newspaper business being what it is, it doesn't provide the kind of flexibility for public notice that is sometimes necessary. So I just thought the author might want to rethink some flexibility.
Comment well made. Comment, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'll make note of that, and we can have another offline discussion on, you know, this isn't the final product here, I'm sure. Yep, thank you for that, pointing it out.
Thank you, Representative Hollis. Seeing no other questions, let's begin. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, just to clarify, does your bill actually eliminate the Citizens Board?
Absolutely not.
Representative Fabian.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, no, it does not.
Well, thank
you. Follow-up, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've gotten the impression from some of the questioning that somehow that we are eliminating this very important board. Citizens' input is important to all of us, but the timing of this input and the impact of it is certainly also important. And I'd just like to remind everyone around the table that this bill does not eliminate the Citizens Board. It, in fact, keeps it in place with a very strong role in rulemaking. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let's begin with Kathy DeBoer from Chicago. Ms. DeBoer, if I messed your name up, could you read?
No, you did.
Okay. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Kathy DeBoer. I'm a farmer and a registered nurse, and I represent John, Kathy, Les, and Mitchell DeBoer. We live a mile south of the latest decision by the MPCA board regarding the Baker Dairy. We live a mile from that dairy and are strongly opposed to it. I'd just like to give you a little bit of background on the situation with that dairy and the permit application process, because I think it's very important in determining how important the Citizens Board is. And I love the name Citizens Board because that's who represents me. Last spring, proper notice was given, comment periods were given, and the dairy was letting us know that they were proceeding to put 10,000 cows in a small area, about a quarter of land, 160 acres, just a mile north of us and a mile to the southeast of neighbors of ours whose 10-year-old daughter has asthma. We were very concerned about the impact. We already have one of their dairies 6 miles from us, and the impact is huge with trucks and safety and water usage. And so we decided we were going to try to oppose this dairy. The dairy was very good in having an informational meeting, which we had on July 22nd at our Chicago, Alberta school. And they came, brought a nice PowerPoint presentation, and were very convincing, except that the 200 people there, at least 90 to 95% were against the project. They did not take our feelings into consideration and kept on with their permitting process. I'm sure that they had gone, you know, quite a ways with this process already, but our only other opportunity to have any input in this process after the comment period was to go to the Citizens Board. I went there, I testified. I'm not trying to put down the MPCA staff or Commissioner Stein in the least, but in my experience what happened is the permit was, I'm just trying to be very nice here, it was just incomplete and inaccurate. And I can give you several examples of problems with this permit that day. The MPCA's hydrogen sulfide level in Minnesota is 30 parts per billion. And MPCA's own modeling numbers said that the hydrogen sulfide level going toward our little neighbor's home was at 29.24 parts per billion. That's very, very close to the Minnesota allowed level, and it was very concerning for us and for her. The aquifers that are being used by this dairy are going to be using 100 million gallons a year, and DNR's own figures say that the aquifers will be at their 50% threshold in between 15 and 35 years. I plan to still be living there in 15 years, and I really would like to have water at my home. The test wells that they drilled at the site showed that there was inadequate or low quality water for their cattle. So they had plans to pipe water for 12 miles. But they had no permits or easements for this pipeline, and in fact, the well that they were going to use hadn't been monitored for years and years. And that was one of the other things that the Citizens Board members brought up and asked questions about that day. They didn't have the required number of acres procured for their manure disposal. And just some other things they said in their application that they mitigate the dust problem with all the semi-trucks going back and forth with the silage and haylage and manure by putting chloride on the roads to decrease the dust. But I can tell you, personal experience, they do not, and I had some days a quarter inch of dust in my mailbox on my mail, and I pick my mail up every day. Okay, so the dust problem was huge, and they said they took care of it, and they didn't. Also, the fairs run several other dairies in our area, and they did have to admit that day in the August hearing on the record that there had been a spill, but there have been no reports of any spills by the Fair Dairy Company, Riverview Farms. So I'm just telling you that MPCA staff recommended to approve this permit. With all these inconsistencies and the inadequacy of the process, and Chairman Stein voted for this permit, even though the other five members of the board that day voted against it. They didn't vote against the permit. Let me clarify that. They voted to require an EIS. This permit is not denied. An environmental impact statement needs to be done to decide if the hydrogen sulfide levels are going to be okay, if there's going to be enough water for the surrounding homes and farms, and if the runoff from spills and so forth needs to be reported. If there is a spill, it needs to be reported. Those are the things that were required by the EIS. I have a lot of other issues with how my quality of life has changed. I live 6 miles from a dairy, and my quality of life has changed for the worse. If I lived 1 mile from a dairy, I can't begin to imagine how much worse it will be. And for me and my neighbors and little Madison Anderson, who has asthma. I really urge you not to remove the power from the Citizens Board. In my case, they are watching out for me and representing me, a citizen. I'd love to take questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Ms. DeBoer, and thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions. I'm sorry, Representative Clark.
I do have one question. When you were talking about the impact of the existing facility 6 miles away, I actually have rural relatives, farm relatives who lived into their 90s in the last, I don't know, dozen years of their living on their home residence. They couldn't open their own windows, and they were people who lived there all their life and raised all their kids there and so on. I'm just wondering if you have any issues with that kind of problem.
The odor?
The air quality and being able to enjoy your air quality.
Ms. DeBoer.
Chairman and members, I don't at my, I'm 6 miles away, and I don't smell that dairy very often. Hydrogen sulfide is not an odor-related gas. You can have high hydrogen sulfide levels without having the ammonia odor. So I don't at this time, but I have the trucks running past my home. When my two boys were learning to drive, it was a nightmare to send them out in driving in our area, because the drivers of all these trucks are, in my opinion, inadequately trained. Each year we have one or two of their trucks that take corners too short. If you drive a long vehicle, you know you have to take it a large corner. The last one, my neighbor was one of the first on the scene, and he asked the driver how many years he'd been driving, and he said, "Well, this is my third day." So, the safety issues are huge. I don't want to live a mile from a dairy. I'm very concerned. My youngest son graduates this year. I really wanted to have his graduation party at my home. As it stands, the dairy won't be in operation by then. But and I'm clear on that matter. But I really think the Citizens Board was the only place that I could say and find out how this was going to affect me because my local meeting, we got nowhere with the company.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Seeing no other questions, thank you. Next to testify is James Canny from Franklin. And if you could come down and tell us who you represent, and apologize if I talked all over your name. If you could give me the correct pronunciation, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is James Canny, and I'm pleased to be here. To a certain extent. It's a beautiful day out there. And a day like this, I'm happy. I'm a dairy farmer and not a representative. Sitting inside of a windowless room, hearing testimony as to what this should do. It's really an honor for me to be a dairy farmer and a small family dairy farmer. So what I'm here about is to give kind of the perspective from the country, the boots on the ground perspective of what we would like to see out from the country and how this would impact us. As a small dairy farmer, we do not, for the most part, worry about the permitting process. It's not something that's going to be a big problem for us. It's not something that's going to be a big hurdle for us to overcome. At this time, I'm very happy to say that I am not a last generation dairy farmer in the state. I'm a sixth generation Minnesota farmer. My family came here in 1854. But I'm not a last generation. My daughter and son-in-law are taking on the farm, and that's the reason I can be here, not home milking cows right now. And they're doing an excellent job of it. And they are in the process of wanting to keep that farm going, which means they want to move forward. They're not looking at going back to something that is, say, 1950s technology or 1940s, what I'm dealing with. They want to go forward. They want to build a new robotic dairy barn. And they are not looking at having any great issues because they're not looking at building huge. They're not looking at building something that will house 9,000 cows. They're looking at building a house 60 cows. They'll house our herd. But for the future of dairy farming as we see it in this state. And that, I think, is what I would like to talk about this morning, in that what is our future and what has been our heritage here in Minnesota. Our heritage in Minnesota was that we came to this country looking for opportunity to be small dairy farmers and farmers out here where we could be independent business people and be able to be ourselves and be who we are as business people out here in the country. And that has been our heritage. And from there, we built our communities, we built our families, and we built forward our state. And to that end, I think is what we should look at as our future. I am not one who believes that our future is something that just unreels before us like a newsreel and it just happens to us. I think our future is something that is a product of our past and our choices and our present. And if we are to make the choices today that will give us the future we want tomorrow, then we need to be looking at what choices are we making. And one of the choices we're looking at is whether or not we will be changing how this board will be impacting us in the future. Having it as a board of last resort is good. Having it as a board that has expertise is good. And if we don't have that, then we have problems. We have problems like they have in Washington State. I brought along my Hordes Dairyman, dairy farmer, and in there they have an article about the manure world is being turned upside down. Because out in Washington State, as of within the last month or so, they had a ruling by a judge out there saying that if you are spreading manure on the ground in your area, you better be really careful about how you're doing it and that you're following your plan, your manure management plan, because if you're not following it and following it to the point where the amount that you're putting on isn't being used by the crop that's coming off, you are no longer just spreading an agricultural product for a fertilizer, you are spreading a hazardous waste. And that's what happens when you get super concentrations. Because when you're talking a small farm like mine, it's not a big problem. We don't have that many cows. But if you're talking a huge dairy, that's a whole nother ballgame. For us, we have about a half mile max to go out to the end of our farm and back again, okay? If you're talking a huge dairy, they got miles and miles of roads that they got to go out and back. They're impacting a lot of people in a lot of ways, and they're impacting infrastructure, new roads around them and their environment. Now, another point I'd like to bring up. Last week, I happened to be down in Iowa, and down there, they just, as of Tuesday, the Des Moines Water Works filed a lawsuit against the three county ditch districts above Des Moines. And this is an article that was put out by a law professor from Drake University outlining the situation. And what they have there is that they have, in the last 20 years, allowed, what do you say, CAFOs to go run amok in this area. They have allowed huge expansion. And because of it, the amount of runoff is now impacting the water into the city of Des Moines. To the tune of, if they do not do something about the runoff coming into their city, they will have to build a water treatment plant that to remove the nitrates that will cost the city $100 million. In other words, if we do not do things, we do not make our choices correctly today, we will pay big prices in the future for those wrong choices. Thank you. Is anybody got any questions? I can see that people are getting restless.
Any questions for Mr. Connie? I don't see any. Thank you for coming forward and testifying. Members, I'm trying to figure out our strategy here. I've got a couple of, at least one more citizen has come forward. I actually think I'll have the citizen come forward now. Stan Suttinger, if you could come forward. I believe you identified that you want to testify. Stan Suttinger from Minneapolis. Okay, here he comes. And then I've got, I'm assuming, two more to testify opposed to the bill. And if I gave each of you 5 minutes, I've got a representative from the Land Stewardship Project and Mr. Morris from MEP. That would get us till 10-2. And I've got 6 testifiers. I'm assuming we want to testify for the bill. Maybe you testifiers for the bill could visit with Ms. Zipko while we hear from the next three and see if you want to limit your testimony, and we could take a vote before 10, and if you don't, we'll just come back tonight. And so I'd rather do that. I want to make sure that all, and we'll consult with Representative Hansen, too, to see how, to this point, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we have some members who have some questions, so we may, when we get to the wrap-up and then the testimony may spur some questions. So,
okay. Representative Hansen, would you prefer we just come back tonight?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back tonight. Okay, so you can disregard everything I just said. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to give testimony. My name is Stan Sattinger, and I'm a resident of South Minneapolis. And I can't claim familiarity with any of the details of the legislation or the proposed changes in the legislation. I'll tell you the reason why I'm here is an article that appeared in yesterday's Star Tribune, and I'll read a quotation. I don't know whether the gentleman is present here today that made the statement, but according to Star Trib, in a recent hearing, Representative Tony Cornish of Vermont Vernon Center told members of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, you wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for the legislature. We gave you rulemaking authority, of which many of us regret. And the reason we're here today and we have some of these bills is because of this arrogance. So this statement in the press concerns me. My definition of arrogance in this connection is the belief that corporate well-being trumps human well-being in importance. I feel that I have a right to clean air, clean water, and a stable climate. The authority of the MPCA Citizens Board, as I understand it, is needed to ensure that corporate interests don't compromise those rights. I oppose House File 1394, as I understand it, which would gut the authority of the MPCA Citizens Board for environmental review. House File 1394 looks out for big business interests at the expense of the rest of us, and I feel that that is wrong. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Suttinger. Not seeing any questions. Appreciate your testimony. Let's see. I think we'll just go back with the order we had and the way it was published then, as long as we're coming back tonight. Mr. Lefebvre from the milk producers, if you could come forward. Thank you. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob Lefebvre. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. It's the organization that represents all dairy farmers. Whether it was like the earlier testifier, organic dairy farmers, and all the way to dairy farmers like the fairs at Riverview and the Baker Dairy that was mentioned earlier. Our motto is, we respect people, and we want to do whatever we can, and we support dairy farmers that follow the law, that are environmentally, socially, and economically sustainable. So, I just want to start by briefly talking about the situation that we have for livestock producers in Minnesota versus other states. We do have the extra process, that's the environmental review process, one of the processes that we've been talking about here this morning, that livestock farmers don't have in other states. And that starts when you reach the stage of 700 cows. If you're 701 cow, you would have to go through the environmental review process and get an NPDES permit, SDS permit, etc. In addition to that, we have the local townships and their zoning, where you have opportunity for public input. You also have the county conditional use permit process, where there is also opportunity for public input. And then as well through the NPDES, SDS permitting process, there's opportunity for public input as well. I think former Commissioner Larson did an outstanding job of laying all that out with you earlier. I think it's also important to note that these operations, dairy operations, dairy farms, have to reach a standard of zero discharge. So in order to receive an NPDES SDS permit, they have to be built and operated in a manner of absolute zero discharge from their operation. And they must also have a manure management plan or a nutrient management plan that does not allow them to exceed crop uptake for the nutrients that are applied back onto the field. That includes both the manure as well as commercial fertilizer. That must be reported on an annual basis, where they'll take the sample of the manure that is applied to the land, and they're add that to that. If they apply any commercial fertilizer, which has to be a part of their permit, that has to be approved. Combine that, and that has to be reported on an annual basis to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I think it's also important to note that this bill that Representative Fabian has put forward does not eliminate the citizens' board. It still keeps them in that capacity where they can ask for and have a public hearing about the, about any particular operation. And I think it's safe to say that if it's one operation, it's too many. It's not about one, just one negative declaration in this case, because of the ripple effect that it has across an entire industry. We just finished having a summit, a Minnesota Dairy Growth Summit, a few weeks ago here in Minnesota, where we had the Lieutenant Governor, we had Commissioner Stein, we had those within industry, and we had dairy farmers. All are committed to wanting to grow the industry in a sustainable manner, because it's good for everybody. It's good for the state of Minnesota environmentally and economically. It's good for dairy farmers because they're going to increase their infrastructure around them. And this is one of those areas. In fact, Commissioner Stein made the statement that we need to find some harmony between the local, county, and state permitting processes. And we believe this is one of those ways in which we can help to provide more harmony in that whole process, in that whole permitting process. I guess in closing, I could get into some of the specifics on Baker Dairy. I will get into one, and that is the fact that the MPCA staff, their technical staff, engineers, and on, along with the project proposer, spent months and months and months developing the putting together their EAW, which actually is a good process. And because if there's anything that perhaps may need to be changed from the original proposal, they're going to find it in that, which is good. And it helps maybe make some adjustments that will improve it both environmentally and socially. The MPCA staff and MPCA commissioner had it recommended a negative declaration for an EIS. The board, the citizens board, after their discussion, and even after Commissioner Stein said, how about if we table this, and then we can maybe have them do a little bit more extra work on this, and it can come back. The board decided to go against the recommendation and issue a positive declaration for an EIS. That meant the MPCA staff had to scramble and automatically change, entirely change, their findings of fact that they had built over months and months and months. In a matter of 2 hours, totally reversed the findings of fact to support the Citizens Board's decision to overturn what the staff had worked on for months. So, again, thank you for putting this bill forward, and we ask you to support it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just minutes ago heard from a brilliant, experienced dairy farmer who helped us understand his business, and he said, we don't have problems with permits. And his lesson to us, I think, was scale makes a difference. You're talking about two very different things. And we heard very clear and helpful testimony just minutes ago about the issue of scale makes a difference. And I don't think we're hearing that distinction.
Mr. LaFave.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you bring up a very good point. Those who are milking over 700 cows have to adhere to a zero discharge standard, and they must have a nutrient management plan. They must adhere to that, and they must report it on an annual basis. Those that are smaller do not have to follow that same standard. They do not have to be built by zero discharge standards. They don't have to report their nutrient management plan. So that is accurate. we're not asking that you necessarily change it, because we do believe those that are larger do have the resources and should be held to a higher standard. And we're and we support that at Minnesota Milk. Our members support that at Minnesota Milk. So there are different permitting challenges. You know, you do not need to have a state or federal permit if you're less milking less than 700 cows. Then, in most cases, you would just work with your county to get to make sure that you're in compliance.
Follow up, Representative Hausman.
Well, Mr. Chair, we also heard from an affected resident of that larger scale farm, and it demonstrates to us why we should hold them to a higher standard when it changes the quality of life of an entire community.
Mr. LaFave.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we agree that I think they should be held to a higher standard. There is no hydrogen sulfide standard for our smallest dairies. So we hope that you don't start putting monitors around them as well to ensure the hydrogen sulfide levels are met there. So, yeah, we do want that because we are concerned about the integrity of the dairy farmers that are across the state of Minnesota. We want to be very transparent, and we have to be, especially on those that are larger, because there is a lot of public scrutiny. So, yeah, we understand that, and our farmers accept that responsibility that if you're getting larger, that there is a higher standard that you must meet. And we're not asking to lower those standards at all. Certainly not. Minnesota Milk supports the existing standards that need to be met.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. LaFave, welcome. I'm kind of thinking back to the testimony we've heard over the last few weeks and talking about zero discharge. We're kind of talking about the outputs, and it seems that this Baker Dairy decision is the key rub here that has resulted in this bill and some of the whole drama over all of this. And I want to look at the inputs from the dairy side when we're going to a large, very large system. If we're looking just at the permitting, we're looking at what comes out. But we've had testimony yesterday about water inputs and water quantity, not that far from where this would be geographically, not close, but in an area where water capacity, cows take a lot of water. So when we look at a large dairy, which my understanding, and I could be not quite accurate on this, but it's my understanding this is the equivalent of a town of like 55,000 people being created in terms of the waste that would be generated. So when you have the large dairy, you've got to be having the hay, you've got to have the inputs, you've got to have the water, making sure that the well capacity is going to be there, what the impacts are in terms of that cone of depression for that water, and looking at how many acres, because phosphorus will be the impact, that phosphorus will be the limiting factor in terms of how many acres you can apply the manure on, because you'll get to a naturally occurring level, plus the use that you might not be able to put it on the same acres year after year after year. So isn't that kind of where the EIS was going, is to look at what's going in and how much you've got to look out rather than just does it make the permit?
Mr. LaFave, before you answer, are you available to come back tonight?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Anticipate that. Mr. LaFave.
All right, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen. Now, I must say I'm not a representative of Riverview Farms, the proposer of Baker Dairy. However, I have reviewed the Citizens Board tape on more than one occasion, and I am somewhat familiar with it. First of all, the well where the Baker Dairy itself was going to be taken from was already permitted by DNR for more than three times the amount that the dairy was going to be taking. So I don't know why that would have been any issue. I mean, DNR approved it. This was going to be taking a third of what they were DNR approved. Secondly, all the other inputs, you're absolutely right, which is one of the reasons why we need to have more cows, which is one of the reasons why I think Mr. Galen Reitz at MPCA, I think, in that recent article stated that, basically, to summarize it, you know, we could use more livestock here in the state of Minnesota. And as long as, and obviously we believe that way too, but we also believe that they must be following the laws, socially, environmentally, in order to economically be sustainable. So, alfalfa on the landscape, Representative Hansen, you obviously know the advantages of that to reducing soil erosion. And all the other benefits of a perennial crop, and the corn silage, being able to take that up earlier allows you then to perhaps in some cases even put on a cover crop if it works into the farmer's management practices. Manure adds organic matter to the soil, helps to enhance the soil profile. I could go on and on. So these operations, you know, any farm, any dairy farm of any size is one of the most perfect life cycle production systems that we have when managed properly. And that's key. And the process that we have in place in Minnesota more than adequately assures that these processes on these farms are going to be managed in a socially and environmentally sustainable manner.
Thank you. Follow-up? No, Representative Hansen. Mr. Lefebvre, thank you for your testimony. I just want to confirm, and I'm going to ask you to come back tonight. I'm thinking of two of my neighbors. Both of them I've had conversations quite a bit over the year, and I want to be sure I think you said this, but I want to be sure. I'm thinking of Kevin Chamberlain, he's on the local SWCD board and had been active for a number of years. I think my last conversation with Kevin is he's milking 60 cows. He's an organic dairy farmer that lives just within about 2 miles of my home. Do you, or is your organization represent folks like Kevin?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do have members who are organically certified. In fact, one of our board members who just retired off the board, Joe Borgerding, is an organic certified dairy farmer. And we have many others who are organic as well, yes.
Okay, and then Mr. Lefebvre, I've got another friend that unfortunately lost his brother tragically. I can think of him was my age as a youngster, but continues to have a very successful dairy farmer, Bill Sorg. He's a bigger dairy farmer for our area. I think he milks a few hundred. I'm almost positive he's under the 700, so whatever that means, he's under that. But does your organization represent someone like Mr. Sorg?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do. Our members, we have members milking as few as 10 cows, and the Riverview is also a member of Minnesota Milk as well. You know, so yes.
Okay.
And everything in between.
Thank you. I think there's additional questions for you, so you've confirmed you can come back. Members, we're going to be. Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you're getting ready to recess for the moment. Thank you. Could I have a moment to clarify something that we talked about?
Representative Dill.
Thank you. Okay, so we were talking about wetlands just a day or two ago, and I gave some information about Coochin County, and I wanted to set the record straight for the members. I talked about some, and it'll take just a moment if you can get
go ahead, that. Representative Dill.
Thank you very much.
We've got 1 minute left, so I don't think you're going to take that long.
Okay, the total, the Coochin County has 1.4 million acres. I was off by 100,000. I was low 100,000. And their average mitigation rate is 3.7 acres per year. So you can do the math and find out that it would take many, many years. Just to give you an example, if Paul Revere, who was born in 1734, destroyed 50 acres per year, we still would not be at the point of getting rid of 1% of the wetlands in Coochin County. Their actual rate of wetland mitigation is 2.7 acres per year. So it would take 14,000 years or something along that line to reach 1%. So I'm just trying to give some scale and magnitude of what I talked about yesterday. I have a handout. I'll pass it out. Thank you.
Okay. And Representative Dill, we can get that to people tonight. Members, we are Representative Cornish.
Real quickly, since my name was mentioned, Tony Cornish of Vernon Center, Minnesota, I still feel the same way about the PCA. Go ahead.
We're surprised, Representative Cornish. Members, we are in recess until 4:30, and we'll be back in the basement hearing room, and we will be voting on this bill tonight. We're in recess. Members, I'd like to bring or Ms. Heinzman would like to bring the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee. That's Representative Heinzman's daughter that did that. Representative Fabian, welcome back. I'd like to reconvene the committee. Representative Fabian, I believe Representative Clark had a question earlier this morning, and we need to actually amend one of the amendments from this morning. We have another amendment. Ms. Taylor, could you speak to the or Dill, you're going to Representative Dill moves the A3. Ms. Taylor, you want to explain what we did wrong?
Mr. Chair, members, one of the amendments we adopted regarding the membership of the Citizens Board was technically not drafted. Instead of putting two more members with expertise in, you know, timber mining, it would have required one member to have expertise in like ag, mining, and timber. This would fix that, so I think it would match the intent of Representative Dill. So it just strikes all the existing language that we amended previously and then replaces it with this new language here.
Representative Dill, is that consistent with your intention?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I consider this to be a technical amendment. It just didn't get when Representative Clark made a couple of comments, it dawned on me that it wasn't expressed quite like I thought it should be. So we consulted with counsel, and this is an amendment that I consider to be technical.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would agree that it would not apply under the 24-hour rule from our side because it is clarifying the previous amendment. I do have a question on application here. If this is then under the existing complement of members, this would designate three, or does it add two additional to the existing number of members to the board?
Ms. Taylor, correct me if I speak wrong, but it does not increase the number of board members.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Any additional comments on the 8th? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Let's see, Representative Fabian. So we got that technical amendment out of the way. Let's see, Representative Fabian, we were with Mr. LaFave, I believe, and we had to cut your testimony. I don't know what additional things you had to say. If there was more, you look real enthusiastic about running down here, so why don't you give us the rest of your testimony, if any. Otherwise, go ahead. Mr. LaFave, welcome. You need to identify yourself for the record again.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bob LaFave. I'm the executive director with the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. It's a grassroots dairy farmer organization, obviously representing family dairy farmers across the state of Minnesota. I guess specifically, you know, I didn't have too much more to say, Mr. Chair, unless you had you or any of the members really had some other comments or questions that you had for me, other than, again, to reiterate our support for the bill, as well as the fact we think this makes a lot of sense. This is not about lowering the environmental standards. Our dairy farmers still have to abide by the same standards, which is zero discharge for everyone that's milking over 700 cows, and it still it does not eliminate public input into the process. In fact, that not only does this not exclude public input to the citizens board, does not exclude any public input at the township level or at the county conditional use permit level or at the NPDS SDS permitting time frame, which also allows for public comment, all of which, you know, gets put into the public record and has an impact on the ultimate permit for the dairy operation.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. LaFave. I want to go back to the line of questioning about evidence and the need for this. Are there, and we've been talking about the dairy proposal,
Are there other projects that are in the pipeline that your association's concerned about that would be affected by the status quo?
Mr. LaFay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen. As far I can't say of anything specifically. What has happened as a result of the ruling, this one ruling, is it has put fear into dairy farmers across the state of Minnesota. And that fear is if they want to go ahead and add some cows, what's going to end up to them and to their livelihood and to their family's livelihood. So as a result, we've seen dairy reinvestment significantly slow down.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. LaFave, I want to probe that a little more. Is that dairy expansion from existing, or is that new large dairies moving in, or is that small, kind of like we heard from one of your dues-paying members this morning about a 60-cow dairy? Are we having folks there who are concerned that this would be impacting them?
Mr. LaFave.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, all of the above. We have not seen a new greenfield dairy be built. We have a couple that have already been through the environmental review process and that are in the queue. Those were already in the queue prior to the Baker Dairy case. We have seen a slowdown of expansion of dairies of all sizes. There's less processes that smaller dairies have to go through. Typically, in some cases, your county conditional use permit, and then they have to meet a certain standard too. If you're over 300 animal units, it's not exactly zero discharge, but it's close to that. So we've seen that. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, I was talking to a dairy farmer who has held off on his. He's moving cows. He has two dairies. They're basically kind of they're near each other, and one is really old, and he wanted to move his cows to another dairy and expand on that. And he's been putting that off as a result. I just talked to him a couple weeks ago.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. LaFave. And I don't know the answer to this. I don't track milk prices, but I just wanted to know how the economy, separate from any permitting issues, separate from, you know, I know that the corn prices have gone down, and so some of those input costs might be a little lower, but what is the milk price been? What are the trends on profitability, separate from any discussion on the permitting issue?
Mr. LaFave.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, this year actually looks relatively lean. I will state last year dairy farmers received the highest milk price they ever received, but they were still dealing with relatively high input costs, feed costs, and this relatively high. We're kind of in a new era of, you know, feed costs from where we were prior to 2007, about 50% higher. And so the milk price right now, while the cheese price is relatively steady here the last few weeks, it's, I'm going to say, $6 to $8 a hundredweight less than what it was last year, which it's lean.
Thank you, Mr. LaFave. Representative Hansen, thank you. Thank you. I see no Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, it almost seemed as though maybe our other dairy farmer might be interested in commenting on that. What my perception of this morning of his testimony, or this afternoon, whatever that was that what strikes the fear in the hearts of some dairy farmers is the threat of very large capacity as opposed to the size that he was talking about. I thought his striking fear in the heart came from quite a different direction. It looks like he might be interested in commenting on that.
Representative Hausman, would you like him to come down, and would you like to ask a question of him?
That would be great.
Are you done, Mr. LaFave? I see no other questions for you, or maybe why don't you just slide over, and there's a third chair there.
Sure. Mr. Chair, could I respond to that? I'm actually...
yes, go ahead, Mr.
My education is applied economics.
Go ahead.
And so I've studied a lot about dairy economics specifically. And what we're seeing happening in the dairy industry is margins continue to get narrower, in large part because consumers want to continue to have a low-cost, high-quality product, which continues to put pressure at the production end, the dairy farmers. So what a lot of dairy farmers have chosen to do is to add cows in order to capture economies of scale, in order to continue to make a living for themselves and their family. And that's what really has pushed that to happen.
And Mr. Lefebvre, if folks want to save money on milk, they should come to the Hastings Co-op Creamery and get 2 gallons of 1% for $5.90. You can't beat the price. Mr. Connie, I think Representative Hausman would like to ask a question of you. Mr. Connie, if you're still available, Representative Hausman would like to ask a question of you. Representative Hausman, if you could ask your question.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I was reflecting on your testimony and the gentleman's here, and there were a few themes that that struck me as very different, and one of those would be what might strike fear in your heart as opposed to what I was hearing.
Mr. Okay. Connie, if you could re-identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
I'm James Connie, and I'm a dairy farmer from southwestern Minnesota. And what I look at is the dairy farmer, and what I'm afraid of for the future is that right now we're pushing production in this country, and basically dairy is a domestic consumption kind of industry. We do export our surplus, and right now, because I'm just reviewing the numbers and Horst Dairyman, we have increased production in this country by 16% over the last 10 years, which means we now have to be exporting that much. And if we look at what happened within, say, the hog industry, where they ended up expanding, and then they ended up having captured the market, so that the huge hog industry players ended up with contracts, which secured their profits, they squeezed out every one of the small hog farmers in the area when that happened. And I can see that happening in dairy if this goes forward, because what happens is that you've got a disproportionate pressure within the market.
Thank you. Follow up, Representative Hausman?
That's fine.
That's good. Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming back down. Any other questions for Mr. Lefebvre? Seeing none, thank you for sticking around for both of you and coming back down. Next, I have Gwen Myers from the League of Women Voters. Gwen, are you here? Oh, here she comes. Okay. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Myers. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
I will do that. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Gwen Myers, and I'm a volunteer lobbyist with the League of Women Voters, Minnesota. As you know, the League is not an environmental organization. It is a good government organization. It is our mission to encourage informed and active participation in government. The League does not support or oppose any candidate or political party.
Ms. Myers, I'm going to ask you to speak into the mic a little more. Thank you.
I'll just move.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Along with protecting the right of every citizen to vote, we support the right of these citizens to know what their government is doing and to participate in the government decisions at all levels. Transparency and citizen participation are top priorities for the League. In addition, our members have taken strong positions over the years to conserve and protect the physical, chemical, and biological integrity of our ecosystem and to protect public health. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, a lead agency protecting our environment and health, is unlike most state agencies, as you've heard, in that much of the decision-making authority for the agency lies in the Citizens Board. This group meets monthly and makes those often controversial decisions in a public setting. Members of the public are often present and are able to testify before the board to share their views. The meetings are webcast for all to see. With archives available for past meetings, contact information for board members is posted on the MPCA website, and members of the public can directly reach board members with their concerns. This is an open and transparent process that has been in place since the MPC was begun more than 30 years ago. It's a proud generation of open public process. House File 1394 would impede this process by removing significant authorities from the Citizens Board, shifting the decision-making authority to the commissioner. While the MPCA commissioner is a fine man and his staff is committed to inclusive public processes, without the open public process that the Citizens Board follows today, there will be less openness and transparency. Protecting the environment is among the government's most important responsibilities for all of us and our grandchildren. The League of Women Voters Minnesota believes that the public has a right to view readily, to understand clearly, and to take part easily in decisions on important environmental questions. This is not the direction that House File 1394 would have us take. We urge you to vote no on this and any other bills that would limit or restrict the open, transparent process laid out in statute today. Thank you for their time this evening.
Thank you. See no questions. Next, we have Mr. Arness from Minnesota Agri-Growth Council. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
I'm not emotional here, Mr. Chair. I've got some allergies, so apologize for that. Perry Osnes, Executive Director with the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair and committee members, to speak in support of House Files 1394. And I do want to mention that earlier this year, a coalition of agriculture groups, commodity groups, and others came forward and supported reform for the Citizens Board. So I'm speaking in support of this bill on behalf of not just agri-growth, but also Minnesota Pork Producers, Minnesota Turkey Growers Association, Chicken and Egg Association of Minnesota, Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers, Minnesota Corn Growers, Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association, and as well as Minnesota Farm Bureau. So, Mr. Chair, I know we've talked about issues already this morning in terms of the reasons why I think from an agriculture standpoint we feel this makes sense, moving the process up further into the process for getting citizen input. We think that does make sense. I think former Commissioner Larson talked today about the uncertainty factor that does impact those that are proposing or trying to get permitted, going all through the process, like the example we've talked about earlier today, and only to find out at the last minute that despite the fact that the staff believes that they are in compliance and ready to be permitted, the board overturns that at the last minute, and it results in additional cost, delays, and uncertainties for the project. I also want to point out, as it's been stated already, that nothing in the bill is rolling back existing environmental regulations, and that's not the intent of this legislation as well. We've delved into dairy economics here, but I think there's one aspect or a context I'd like to just add to that whole conversation. Bongard's Creamery is the plant that Riverview Dairy would have supplied the milk to. They bought the Purim plant about 10 years ago, I believe. At that time, the plant was looking at closing. And because of the additional milk that they were hoping to come forward from Riverview, they invested $34 million into their plant last year. And I mention that because a lot of this, at the end of the day, this is about protecting the environment and all that, and yet there is an economic aspect to that, rural economic development as well. And not just for this one dairy, and not just for Bongard's themselves, although we're grateful that they've chosen to reinvest in Minnesota, but the fact that all 400 member patrons of that co-op, of all sorts of sizes of dairy, small and large, are going to benefit from the standpoint that plant is going to stay in business. They've made the decision to reinvest. We have to think about that part of the equation as well, that we want to make sure that our dairy processors feel like there's going to be a positive business climate in the state to encourage dairy production and modernizing dairy in the state. So, with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop my comments. Thank you for the opportunity to provide those today.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, we appreciate it. Next testifier, Dan Dorman, Greater Minnesota Partnership. Welcome back, Representative Dorman. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Pleased to be back before your committee. My name is Dan Dorman. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. We're an organization of cities, EDAs, chambers of commerce, and businesses, nonprofits, higher ed institutions throughout greater Minnesota. And so we have a wide variety of members of our organization. You know, members, as I think about this and I listen to the testimony this morning, one could walk away thinking two things, that this is only about agriculture and that what the heck do we need this board for since they have only turned down maybe one permit? Why do we need them? They appear to just pass everything. Sorry. So, but I don't think either of those statements are true or the complete picture. I think that citizen involvement in the permitting process is a good thing. I think moving it up early is a good thing. But it's not about agriculture only. It's about and I should point out, Mr. Chair, that in this case I'm not a stakeholder. I'm a steak eater. And one of the best steaks I've had in St. Paul, in fact, wasn't in any restaurant, but it was in Rep. Hausman's home back when I was a member. She was kind enough to have me over for supper one night, her and her husband, and I enjoyed that very much. But it's about...
Representative Dorman, yes. To that point, Representative Hausman lives in my wife's grandparents' home. So I want you to know that you were in my wife's grandparents' home when they were professors at the... He was a professor at the university. And Representative Dorman, he was a professor that worked on dairy cows.
So he was so pro-cow as well.
That just, he's pro-cow too. It shows you the small world we live in.
Yes,
Mr. Dorman, continue with your testimony after I digress.
No. Digression is good sometimes. But to the point of this, it's important, you know, from a city standpoint, to see that businesses can get apply for and get permitted, and they have some confidence of here's the process, here's the hoops that I have to jump through, and if I can jump through these hoops and I make it all the way to the end, good things will happen, hopefully. And I think involving the Citizens Board much earlier in that process is a good thing. Again, not just for agriculture, but for many, many businesses in the state of Minnesota and the cities and townships where they are located. So I would encourage you, Mr. Chair, members, to give this bill consideration. I would urge you to pass it. I think that at the end of the day, we'll look back and say, boy, this was a good thing and it improved the process. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll limit my comments because I know you're short of time, but would be happy to answer any questions. It was a good stake, too.
Mr. Dorman, seeing no questions, thank you for coming forward. Next, I have both Mr. Clavin and Mr. Schoenfelter said that Mr. Lefebvre had wrapped up their comments pretty well, and Peter Onnes. And I walked all over your name again, Peter, sorry. It's getting too late in the day. Perry. Yeah, what did I say, Terry? I can't read. I don't have my glasses on. Sorry. There we are. Now, well, I'm really going to walk on Paul Sobczynski. I probably didn't do too bad there from the Land Stewardship. Mr. Sobczynski, if you could come forward. If I walked all over your name, I had my glasses on, so at least I could read it. Welcome to the committee, and thank you. And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Sobczynski. As long as you say it a little bit slow, it's pretty easy. You just go Sol, Bo, Sin, you know the word sin, then ski to heaven.
All right.
That's why I like to look at it.
Welcome. Go ahead with your testimony.
You.
And who do you represent?
My name is Paul Sobczynski. I work with the Land Stewardship Project Policy and Organizing Program. I've done that since 1993. Land Stewardship Project works on behalf of sustainable agriculture that sustains the farmer, the community, and the environment. We support more farmers on the land raising crops and livestock. Besides state policy, we work on federal policy, programs like the Conservation Stewardship Program and the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program. We also have a community-based foods program and a Farms Beginning program in the state that's been around for 10 years plus. And we just started a program called Farm Transitions. Land Stewardship Project has about 3,700 family membership. About a third are farmers, a third live in rural Minnesota, and another third throughout the rest of the state, including the metropolitan area. I'm also a crop and livestock farmer, done that since 1976. Raise hogs, raise beef cattle, and have diversified crops, including pasture. I was involved in our community back in the early 1990s when a proposed large-scale operation, a 1,200-cell operation, was proposed in Redwood County with earthen basins, and one of them was proposed next to Jackpot Junction. Ultimately, a number of citizens in the area came together, worked through the local control process in terms of the county ordinance, and ultimately the county decisions made, the county commissioners made the decision that this proposed operation should not go forward. Meanwhile, in Renville County, the same type of situation was occurring there. One of the entities called Val Adco did narrowly go forward in the county, and as a result, there was huge problems. They used earthen basins in their operation. And it wasn't until another entity finally bought them out later, Christensen Farms, that was cleaned up. It was through that whole process that Land Stewardship Project was involved, worked here at the Minnesota Legislature, and finally was able to get a law passed that said, in terms of the hog operations, that the storage of manure should be done with concrete pits, and that took care of a lot of the problems that were occurring in the industry at that time. And the other piece was, during that period of time, we worked on legislation because of Val Adco, because of the hydrogen sulfide gas that was given off, was the start to getting legislation in the state that talked about hydrogen sulfide and starting to set some standards. And hydrogen sulfide is a gas. Yes, it can have odor associated, but it really is a gas, and it can be lethal, and it can affect people with health, especially people with health conditions. I feel that Minnesota has been a lot smarter than some of our neighboring states, other states like Iowa. Our livestock operations are more dispersed, scattered throughout the state. We don't look like Iowa, where you see, when you're driving down the road to Des Moines, you see 8 or 9 barns right after another. We don't think that's good business. You need to get along with your neighbors, work with neighbors, not cause a situation that makes someone who's always been a farmer not be happy about having a livestock operation located next to them. In terms of why we're involved in this, we think that citizens in our state have some rights, and some of those rights are because we have laws in Minnesota that are different than Iowa, such as local control, the rights of townships, counties, cities to do land use planning. We also have the rights in terms of Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to have a citizens board that could hear about what's happening in terms of what's being proposed. You have the what we call the EAW process, by which citizens have the opportunity to comment about what their concerns might be about a proposed operation. The process by which then citizens can, and then at that time the staff writes their comments about what the citizens have to say. That EAW process also allows other state agencies to put their input in, and again, the staff of the MPCA responds to that. And so when you come to the final process that happened, in particular this case with Riverview Dairy, the citizens board had before the facts about what the proposals were saying. They had the comments what the staff were saying, and the citizens had one more opportunity to say something about that. They had an opportunity to respond to what the staff said. That's the last place that they had the opportunity to respond what the staff said as it relates to their comments, and to point out discrepancies. And the important part of this process is having a citizen board to evaluate what the staff had come up with in terms of their recommendations, and to evaluate what the citizens had to say about that. That process is important. We should be proud in this state that we have a citizens board. We should be proud that citizens care about the environment. And we should have a process that welcomes that. When we talk about other states, there's, you know, the testimony this morning about Des Moines. We don't, why let that happen? Let citizens bring forward their comments to a citizens board. I mean, this bill is about taking away the power of the citizens board to be heard by other citizens. That's what it's about. There's no question about that. So in terms of looking at that decision that was made, I guess a couple pieces that I would like to point out. The decision was made with good reason. It was not, as was quoted in the St. Paul paper, made on the basis of politics and emotion. It was made on the basis of facts. I mean, if you read the whole entire decision process, it's all laid out here. clearly. And I'd like to highlight a couple of those points in terms of that process. Impacts on groundwater. The operation would have used 100 million gallons of water in a year from an aquifer that the DNR says will be unsustainable by the year 2030.
Mr. Sobozinski, I'm just wondering, is it a document that we have, or if you could just tell us, if we don't have, if you could tell us what document you're reading from?
I'm referring to the document to the Municipal Pollution Control Agency findings of fact. The date, you should have it, August 28, 2014.
Mr. Sobozinski, we do not have that, and I'm just wondering if do you only have one copy? If you do, that's fine. When you get done with it, I'm going to ask the page if you could give it to the page.
I'm sure that the
Mr. Sobozinski, wait till I'm done talking. If Mr. you only no, you wait.
Yes.
If you only have one copy, when you are done with it, I'm going to ask and done testifying, I'm going to ask the page to copy it so we could all have a copy. Continue on, Mr. Sobozinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for interrupting
you. Sorry, I'm the only guy that can interrupt. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Impacts on groundwater. The operation would use 100 million gallons of water a year in part of an aquifer that the DNR says will be unsustainable by 2030. The DNR says in their comments to the EAW, because of existing project projected water level decreases in production wells and nearby DNR observation well, DNR is concerned with about the sustainability of groundwater use in the area. And that's found, in my opinion, that's found in point 8 findings of fact. Insufficient acres for manure application. The operation would generate 75 million gallons of raw liquid manure and need about 6,300 acres to apply that on. They only have access to 3,600 acres. The risk of exceeding the hydrogen sulfide limits. The hydrogen sulfide modeling showed that the operation would be 29 parts per billion, very near the legal limit of 30 parts per billion, and needs more assessment. And that's found in point 11 of the findings of fact. To me, when I look at the situation, what's proposed here, the hydrogen sulfide piece being a gas, being the effect of a child being close to in proximity where this proposed operation was being talked about. When you're at 29.2 parts per billion and the hydrogen sulfide modeling says, 30 parts per billion, that's going to be too high, obviously that, to me, that's fairly risky. I believe the Citizens Board made the right decision in saying that's too close to the threshold. We should value human life. We don't want to take a chance here. So I appreciate the opportunity to come before you and to testify and the opportunity to talk about these issues. Land Stewardship Project, again, cares about having more people on the land producing crops and livestock. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sobozinski, for coming forward. Question? I don't see any, so if you don't mind, if you just could give that to the page, we'll have one of the pages go copy it, and then they'll give you your copy back.
Yep.
So thank you, and thank you for my interruptions of you, and you're doing good.
Oh, thank you.
Yep, appreciate you coming forward. Next we have, let's see if I can figure out the order here. Okay, let's go with Mr. Morris. I thought I saw Steve Morris, if you could come forward from Minnesota Environment Partnership. And then why don't we do Mr. Hottinger, and then Mr. Busselman's been added, and Tom Peterson. And I think you're both all. So everybody, Mr. Busselman, are you actually here? He might not be, or maybe he's going to be here, but we can put him to the end if he shows up. If not, Mr. Morse. And then members, Representative Hansen, is someone going to ask for a roll call? Is that correct? Do you want to?
I'll do that now, just so it's on the record.
Thank you. So it's on the record that there's going to be a roll call requested. Representative Fabian, that wasn't me asking for a roll call. That was confirming that Representative Hansen in private had told me he was going to want it. The reason I'm making that announcement, members, when we actually go to a roll call, it will be a slow roll call because there are other members of this committee in other rooms, and I want to give every one of them an opportunity to come down to the room and be on the record if we can find them. So we may stay open for a while we vote. Just an FYI on that. I do anticipate that we're probably within 15, 20 minutes of getting to that point. Mr. Morse, welcome. Good to see you again.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're optimistic about how fast we'll get all of this completed. So
we'll go as slow as we need
to. We wish you well. My name is Steve Morse. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We're the state's largest coalition of environmental conservation organizations, representing something over 400,000 Minnesotans. And just a little personal history, I think, that's interesting on this. As many of you know, I served in the state Senate for 12-plus years before going over to DNR as deputy commissioner. And during that time, which ended in the late 90s, it was in my budget bill that we actually changed the MPCA board and put the commissioner on the board. I believe it was Commissioner Larson at the time. He convinced me it made sense to put the commissioner on the board in order to provide for better integration as a voting member as opposed to an ex officio. And you know, I thought that made a lot of sense, and I still think that makes a lot of sense. So I'd like to make a few points about why I think it would be a mistake to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because I believe that's what this bill actually does. As you know, Minnesotans widely share the belief that we cherish our natural resources and take pride in our outdoor heritage. And I believe all of us are fundamentally in agreement on that. However, how we do it really makes a difference. The involvement of the citizens is a very productive and positive, has a very productive and positive impact for a number of different folks. Number one, the citizens board, the way it's structured now, is good for citizens. It actually gives them a place at the table at the meaningful part of the time, which is when it's decision-making time. We have other instances in the state, like the University Board of Regents, like the PUC, that are in similar positions. Just think how the conversation would go if we came forward and said, you know, the Board of Regents, oh, it's so hard, you're always at the end of the process. You guys ought to be down in the faculty lounge, and then we'd really know what's happening in the student union and let the president make all the decisions. The truth is, if we want to expand the role of the PCA board, it might make sense to have them involved further up in the process, but as citizens, that gets really difficult. If you really want citizen involvement and citizen engagement, we feel it's really important that it be at an important and significant place, and that's in the decision-making process. So it's good for the citizens. Also, we think it's good for the MPCA, because when there's a citizen kind of reality ground-truthing check at the end of the process, it impacts the entire administrative process as they're going along the way, so that they know that contentious decisions are likely going to go to the board, and so they'll prepare their case well, take the input, and make their case adequately. And I would also argue that it's actually good for the regulated industries. In the long run, having a board that is, as Commissioner Beaman described, kind of a safety valve, so when there are contentious issues, there's a significant, meaningful, and real forum where citizens can come forward and be heard, is good ultimately for the regulated industry. Because if it's viewed as a process that is closed, with everything on the inside, not transparent, without real meaningful citizen engagement, ultimately, I think it's going to lead to more difficulties, problems, and greater difficulties in getting things through the permitting process. So we would argue that it's good all the way around. Yes, sometimes it may take a little longer on specific cases, but overall, it's a good investment of time. I can't say I'm tremendously surprised that the regulated industry is in here saying, gee, we'd just as soon get the citizens out of the process. I understand how people can get frustrated when a case goes the wrong way. But again, let's not throw the baby out with the bath. The next point I'd like to make is just the history. We've had almost 50 years of a citizens board, and if you look at how environmental protection activities and conservation activities have worked over the decades, it's almost always driven by citizen engagement on the front end. Very rarely do we get a regulated industry standing up and say, hey, we have to really reform ourselves because, you know, we've got these water problems, or we've got these Superfund problems, we've got some other problems. It's almost always citizens stepping up and saying, you know, we're not going to take this anymore. And so that citizen involvement is a fundamental part of the entire process, and now it's been institutionalized, and we think it makes sense to keep it that way. We've made a lot of progress with the PCA board over the last 48 years, tremendous progress in Superfund, tremendous problem on point source pollution, and they can applaud their work for take some responsibility for that. But we also have some major work left to do, especially when we look at agricultural non-point and other non-point kind of next generation issues. We have to be creative about how we do that so that we can be effective and still keep the industries viable. The last point I'd like to make is that fundamentally it works. It works pretty darn well, what we have. It works better than in other states. We're not always happy. We've got a long history of not being very happy with the PCA Citizens Board on a lot of their decisions. Some decisions are good. Some things we differ with. But we fundamentally think it makes the process healthier. It makes it more open, makes it more public. And in the whole, we get better protection for our resources in a cost-effective and efficient way. So our partnership feels very strongly that this is to pass this bill would be an erosion of some of the bedrock fundamental environmental policies that we have in the state. It'd be an erosion of public participation, and we hope the committee will not move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morse, for your testimony. We appreciate you coming forward. Seeing no questions, we'll move to the next testifier. Mr. Hottinger from the Sierra Club, I believe you are next. Senator, welcome back again. Just coincidentally, we have two former senators following a former rep, so I'm probably confusing people on the record when I say Mr. Hottinger, then Senator Hottinger. It just comes natural. Senator Hottinger, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm John Hottinger, and I'm representing the Sierra Club, the North Star chapter in Minnesota. It's hard to follow the eloquence we get from Ms. Myers from the Land Stewardship Project and Senator Morris, so I'm not going to try and do that. I would like to associate myself, however, with their excellent comments. The one thing I'll add is not so much in this decision, but on the concept of citizen engagement. I had the opportunity of spending 4 years going around the country working in citizen engagement after I left here, and I found out a couple of things. Number one, we pride ourselves on our citizen engagement, but we have nothing to brag about. Our citizen engagement all too often is the same old people saying the same old thing in front of the same old people. I go out of context and talk about the big hearing in St. Paul that I went to on the mining proposal up north, copper nickel mining. Lots of people there, lots of people, and they were going to draw names out of the hat. But every time they drew a name, they said, well, I'm going to give up my time to our paid spokesman, in essence. We don't have citizen engagement here, and the MPCA board has been a shining example of citizen participation, where citizens make decisions, where they get to evaluate information and testimony and evidence, where they do that in a way a little less subject to the strong cries of special interests. We have a gem here, and to reduce the power of citizen engagement in this area, I think, would be unfortunate, and the Sierra Club agrees with that. So we take pride more than we deserve in our citizen engagement. To cut back on citizen engagement in a very important area where we have actually established a better measure of it, I suggest would not be a wise idea. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate it. The chance to be heard.
Thank you, Mr. Hottinger. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hottinger, I'm thinking back to the 90s or even the 80s when there were conflicted cases that came to the Citizens Board, and the Citizen Board ruled in favor of the industry. Can you were in the Senate at the time, I wasn't here, but even in the history with the Sierra Club, did the environmental groups ever come and want to change the process when they disagreed with the outcome?
Mr. Hottinger.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, you give my gray hair more longevity than I deserve. I came in the early 90s, and I don't remember any effort by the environmental groups to reverse the decisions of a citizen board then. I may be mistaken. I was frankly focused on early childhood and a couple of other issues in those early days. But I hope not. Because, you're going to disagree, whatever your perspective, when these decisions are made. And there is process to respond to those decisions, to turn it over to a less citizen engagement. And especially with, as I understand, the amendment that was added today, which gives specific voices on the board for some of the regulated industries, at least indirectly, is not a step forward, but rather a step backward. And I did hear, and I apologize, I wasn't here this morning. I was working once again in my allergy. But It sounds like this was one dramatic case that many of us have heard about, that there's a lot contested about it. But for the most part, I haven't become aware of a long string of cases that people are now saying were somehow distorted by citizens having a chance to make an informed judgment. That's much longer answer than my testimony, probably. But thank you for the question, Representative.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Osnes and Mr. Hottinger need to get together on an allergist or something. They seem to both be...
we were just conferring, actually.
Well, good luck with that. And seeing no further questions, thank you for coming forward and testifying.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Last testifier I have is Mr. Peterson from Farm Union, because I don't see Mr. Busselman in the audience. Is there anyone else? Could you raise your hand if anyone else in the audience? And I was going to give the agency an opportunity and then go back to you, Representative Fabian, but I didn't know if the agency wanted to come back and comment further, but we'll check on them. Welcome, Mr. Peterson. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version. And I visited with Representative Fabian about this, and I appreciate it, but we are opposed to the bill and visiting with our members about it. We do not feel the system is broken. We recognize a lot of the consternation is about one large dairy in western Minnesota. And, you know, we felt that the citizen decision-making has been working, and we've been supportive of the process. I do appreciate the attempt to, you know, look at more citizen involvement, and our organization does, but we would oppose the bill at this time. I'd also want to always mention that I always feel like we're doom and gloom on the livestock industry in Minnesota, but I always want to remember, too, that, you know, we're number one in turkeys in Minnesota. In the last year, we went from, in June of last year, we passed North Carolina and went to number two in hogs. Our dairy numbers have stayed relatively stable. We've been at about 450,000 cows while we've been losing farms. And so our farms, even within Farmers Union, our farmers have grown quite a bit. And I've seen, you know, relatively the last, you know, 10 years, a lot of more smooth permitting processes in the state and seen a lot of facilities move forward. And so that's a point I want to make. I also want to say that I think it's always good to focus on, in my time with Farmers Union, I always feel like we talk a lot about who quits farming, and I think, and especially in dairying, and I think it's always important, too, to talk about who does start dairying, because I do see a lot of people, especially on the smaller end of things, that want to get into it and do get into it, and I think there are a lot of opportunities there. So just a comment, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you, Mr. Peterson. Appreciate you being here, as always. Any questions? I don't see any, but thank you for coming forward. Why don't we have the agency? And anybody else in the public want to speak about the bill? Anybody else in the public want to speak about the bill? Okay. Why don't we bring the agency back down? Do we still have two pages in the room? Or are we? Are there? Looks like maybe they've already gone out to look for people. If you want to go up and go into the other hearing rooms, Representative Cornish is not here. Okay, Representative Cornish should be, it might be up in his office, if you could find him. And and Representative Heinzman, I don't see, is here. Anybody else? Representative? Okay, then we're good. But and Representative Hackbarth, if you could go find all of them. I kind of led him to believe we weren't going to be quite so quick. So the three of them I know of. Go ahead. Welcome back, Commissioner. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, again, I'm Michelle Beeman, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Pollution Control Agency. The main thing that I wanted to come back and speak about this morning, my testimony was focused more on the overall principle of why we oppose the bill, being the fundamental changing of the Citizens Board from a decision-making body to advisory. But looking more at the bill in terms of the logistics and the framework that's being set up, and listening to a number of the comments talk about the board being inserted earlier in the process and won't this be helpful and being out in the field, I really want to convey also our strong concern about, to use the cliche, be careful what you ask for or what is being set up here, because the way that this is framed is meetings or hearings can be requested by a fairly low threshold, and the board has to go out and have meetings. And so the number of meetings that could potentially be asked for and probably would likely be asked for by community members, people who are concerned about a project that would not before have come before the board, may now well at least be having hearings. And so the logistics of bringing board members around the state, does that mean bringing the commissioner around multiple times per month outstate, bringing staff out and about to explain the details of a permit? We obviously deal with lots of public meetings, and the idea of how many times this would come up, we're just requested a fiscal note, and we've just been trying to figure out for ourselves what would this really look like. And I think in theory there's some idea of it's better to be closer to the community on certain issues, but one of the advantages in the board meetings is they're set at a regular time. We can have multiple agenda items. We have staff in the building who can be called upon to come and answer questions, especially questions that come up that were unexpected, again, to keep things moving. We've had board meetings where we've had to call someone from the DNR, the neighboring building, to come over. That obviously doesn't work when you're sort of out and about in outstate Minnesota. And so, again, I think this framework at a superficial level might sound good, but if you really look at it, I'm not sure how we would administer this in a way that's meaningful and timely in the sense of keeping things moving. When the citizens have questions and concerns, they want to know, what does that permit look like? Or what is in that final EAW? So that means you're at the end of the process if you're going to have a meaningful document or a defined project to present to the citizens and have staff explain it. If you're too early in the process, I think, as Senator Morse was saying, it's not helpful. It creates actually more frustration on the part of the public if you have to answer, we don't know yet, or, well, we'll get to that when we get to the permit, the final permit. You can create actually more frustration in the community than less. So I just wanted to address more of the specifics of the framework and say that I don't think that this is solving the problems that seem to be driving the author. So we will try to respond to the fiscal note as best we can. It is going to be hard to predict, in a sense, how often this will come up, but we think it will be more often than we will be having regular board meetings under the current scenario.
Questions for the commissioner? Commissioner, I think I'm following where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. So you're saying you would prefer that citizens, if it was a hearing, I think one of them, I remember once there was a hearing up in Roseau County, instead of state government going out to Roseau County and hearing what people have to say, it's more convenient for MPCA to have those citizens come to St. Paul so you'll be there to talk to them? Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, I know it is a tough balance between St. Paul versus outstate. What I'm saying is, the way this is framed up, there could be a much larger number of matters, as it's defined, that are being asked to go outstate and hold a public meeting with board members. Right now, there's screenings, there's thresholds of matters that come before the board. There is a tension between having the subject matter experts who are available because they work here in St. Paul be able to be responsive to those citizens versus going out to where the community is but not having the right people or the right information there. So it's a balancing act, and I think what you potentially are creating here is a situation that will create more frustration by those citizens or community members than actually satisfaction in getting responsiveness from their government.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, thank you for coming forward. I'm sorry.
I don't have a question, but I have comments.
I'm sorry. Representative Fisher. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Sorry. Chair. I don't have any questions for the folks, but I do have some comments before we do the voting. So
okay. Yep. And you can do them now if you want. Otherwise, Representative Fabian was going to pipe in. But Representative Fisher, why don't you go ahead? You've got the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to kind of comment a little bit on the testimony that we've been hearing. And I think that the biggest thing that I look at is, number one, is reviewing what the Legalman voters said. Well, they're coming down and looking at good government, and they're saying that they're not seeing anything out of the ordinary. They're saying what we have is working well right now. And, and we've had some documents before showing us a lot of, some of the things that have happened over the last couple of years. And there isn't anything that's striking me as being showing a board that is out of control. It seems to be a board that is being responsive to a variety of different situations. And what I mean by that is that it seems that part of this is being instigated by one unusually large request coming in. And I've heard reference to people saying, well, you know, staff had put together the proposals. I've seen on the local government side where staff has put together proposals and the groups they bring it to say, this isn't right, we need you to take a look at it again from another point of view. They go back and they do that. Staff doesn't always necessarily get it right. And I don't see a situation here where it looks like we've got a board that is out of control and second-guessing staff all over the place. So from that aspect, I think it is really premature to be having this kind of agency where we're changing it from a point where they have some real power to be able to say there's something unusual going on. And in this one situation, I think there was something on the agriculture side very unusual going on, in being a very large farm that is hugely large in scope of size from what has been typical in the past. And I think the other thing, taking a look at it, is it seems in some ways that it's kind of a response is, you know, business doesn't like uncertainty. And what this did, and I could hear that, is that business, you know, from the egg side, they got very uncomfortable. Oh my gosh, this is changing it. It's going to complicate the process. That's part of the environment that we live in. I think our state here has got citizens wanting to be very concerned, and I don't see them over-exercising the citizen input. And what makes that input important is that the citizens can see that there would be an actual decision that a citizen group could make saying, we need more information, we need it to hold, or sometimes they'll say, you know what, they've got it right, we're going to go ahead. And I think that's what the big change is that's occurring here is that it's not just having the citizens having an opportunity to come and talk, it's about coming up and knowing that they've been able to have a chance to be heard and occasionally see that, my gosh, there's a citizens group that's listening that actually has some real power. And my examination and from what I'm hearing from others, I don't hear that it's being abused. And so I have concerns that we would go down the road and go in this area, coming from an area where business is uncertain, and it's like we're weighing what's more important. Is it making sure that we can guarantee business more certainty so that they can make profit, or providing the input from the citizens where they feel that they've got a legitimate say and legitimate input in the process of decision-making? And that's where it's coming down, where decision-making is coming. And right now, the citizens have that, and from what I'm hearing, the citizens would lose that part, and I don't think that's something that we are seeing the need for that at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for giving us time to talk about this. I first heard about this issue last summer, and frankly, and I've been thinking about it a long time. And I just want to open by saying that I'm going to talk about my district, District 19A, which is all of Nicollet County, part of Kosota, and part of Mankato. And in my district is significant mining and a whole lot of livestock operators. And I really believe that our livestock operators and our mining operators are good citizens and good neighbors, and they work hard to do that. They work hard to be that. And I think, we've heard a lot about small and large livestock operators. The large operators and the small operators are good citizens in my county. I want to tell briefly two stories that I think are very relevant, because it's kind of made me conclude that sometimes political discord or contention pays off in the long run. First is Uniman. Uniman Company mines silica sand and outside of Kosota, and actually north of Kosota in Ottawa. When they first proposed mining silica sand in our area, this is 40 years ago about, there was a lot of contention. There was a lot of discomfort. There was a lot of tension. It was hard. It took a lot of time. There's a group called Save the Kosota Prairie, still has some vestiges, still operates in my area, and they're at loggerheads with the Uniman Corporation. And it's part of our history, part of our story. But the good part of the story is eventually they came together. After this long process, this long, difficult struggle, they came together. And I think it's fair to say that most of my neighbors would say that Uniman is a model company in the way it does mining, to the point where I find it very interesting that Uniman now asks Save the Kosota Prairie to sign off on their environmental plans. Last summer, I attended an educational event out on the prairie where taking a step back, the contention was at that time was Saint preserving part of this prairie. It's a distinct landform. And they agreed to save part of the prairie and then restore the prairie as they mine. And so last summer they had an event where they brought in an eco bus and to teach us about this about ecological issues associated particularly with the Kasota Prairie. And you can't see the line. You can't tell where the original prairie was and where they've reclaimed that. That's an accomplishment. And who sponsored the bus? Uniman Corporation and Save the Kasota Prairie. My point being that I think Uniman is in a stronger position today because they worked through that long, contentious struggle. And I hope Uniman shows off its work in Kasota as an example of what they as a company can do to be a good citizen, a good environmental citizen. A few years later, I think it must have been about 10 or 20 years ago, the Davis family decided that they wanted to establish a large dairy outside of St. Peter, not that far from Gustavus Adolphus, which is a revered institution in my district and deeply loved. And everyone said, my goodness, you're going to put this huge dairy outside, right outside Gustavus Adolphus, just out near St. Peter. And again, lots of contention, lots of discomfort, lots of tension. It was hard. It took time. Again, the Davis family and the community worked this through. They worked it, and it took time. And today, I think people would say the Davis Dairy does a very good job for us, and they're a strong citizen. And in fact, we learned about some of their citizenship the other day in the Ag Committee when the veterinarian college at the University of Minnesota explained a distinct program that they have with the Davis family and the Davis Dairy, this large dairy outside of St. Peter, whereby they're training veterinarians. My point being that there's sometimes we have development that's harder than other development. And I think there's actually some value in this struggle that goes about, but we've got to do it well. And I think I'll be voting against this bill because I think it's the process that we have set up in Minnesota is worth preserving. It allows the citizens to be heard. I think it gives the citizens a chance when there are significant concerns to kind of have that last look on a project, and then to redo it again one more time. Where I live, I think my neighbors say, with a lot of things we try to do in government, do it right. And I think the Citizens Board helps us do it right, and has helped us do it right in processes like this in my district and throughout Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, since we had our conversation a few hours ago, I've been rereading the bill and trying to understand just exactly what I would do, because I told you one thing, I'm going to do another, and that doesn't make me feel good. But I didn't understand the bill. But I believed it was that we were... We weren't doing away with the process the way we knew it, and now I'm after I've done my due diligence, I understand that it's certainly changing the process and the decision making, and I want to have a few comments to start out, because it when I think about this, I we've heard a lot about the decision that maybe precipitated this, maybe not. But folks came talked about the big dairy farm and such. And you know, as a kid on a farm in the 50s and 60s, you know, we talked about the smell of money. That's the way the old timers talked about it. And it wasn't a negative thing. But, you know, there was a family on every quarter section, and the communities were supported by those families. And now there's a family on every 10 sections or 5 sections or whatever it is in our rural communities. Most of them don't exist anymore. And I'm working with Representative Gunther, and I think there's others, to try and rebuild our communities to get small ag back going again. So I just want that as a backdrop for what I'm thinking about in this whole process. But the Citizens Board at the front end of the process, when we talked about that, Representative Fabian, that's a good thing. I think that they need to be. You bring them in the process sooner, and then they can understand perhaps better, and maybe the process will be more less contentious, and decisions could be made that are not so contentious. But then when I hear, well, there's been like one or two contentious decisions in the last, I don't know, decades, so it really makes me wonder if we need to move them to the front end. But we're moving to the front end of the process, but let's don't take them away from the back end of the process. Why not? Why don't we trust our citizens? Why don't we trust our folks? I trust the people I represent out in the rural Minnesota. I trust them a lot. And why wouldn't I trust citizens to make those decisions, whether it's township, school board, whatever, and we had some of this discussion. So I can't support the bill as it is. And the thing that I'm going to leave at the last thing I'm going to say is, I'm going to go back to the smell of money again, and the smell of money is way different if you got 100 head of steers or heifers that you're feeding out, which is a lot of what we did with cow-calf, and had some hogs around, had chicken, we had everything. You know, you took care of yourself, you know. But it's a lot different, and we knew how to rotate crops, and, you know, I'm just going to say we know how to farm. And no offense to any farmers today, but we could do it without chemicals, and we made livings. But this lady that testified earlier, Kathy DeBurr, the thing, I wrote down one thing she said. She said she wants to have her son's graduation party at her home. Can you imagine not being able to have one of your kids' or grandkids' graduation party at your home because of the smell of money? Can you imagine that? I can't. I'd be, like, ticked off. You know, I wouldn't use bull hockey or nothing like that, but I'd be ticked off. And so I just want to leave you with that. Imagine if we were in a situation and you didn't have a citizens board that was out there protecting the citizens of Minnesota, and you said, I can't have a kid's graduation, I can't have my grandkids' graduation party at my house because it stinks too bad. And that can happen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chair. And I had made some points earlier this morning about I feel this bill is a solution in search of a problem that we didn't really have permits, et cetera, being denied. But there were a few comments made about, well, we're not getting rid of the Citizens Board, so what's all the fuss about? Well, we're certainly gutting it, and you know, if you look at lines 15 and 16, you know, that's the essence of this bill. They can do hearings, but they can't make decisions. You know, it's a little like us doing informational hearings about every bill, but not being able to vote on them. And so that's my concern. We're really significantly gutting this institution. And why? It appears because they ordered an industry to do an environmental impact statement. I mean, they didn't deny a permit. They simply ordered, they said an environmental assessment worksheet isn't enough. You should do an environmental impact statement. An EIS has never stopped a project. What an EIS does is lay out some alternative scenarios to what the proposer's doing, and the proposer often is either paying for or doing the EIS, so that's a whole nother problem. But so an EIS lays out some options and involves citizens more in the process. That's what we seem to be so upset and concerned about, an environmental impact statement. So I would encourage a no vote. You know, Chair McNamara, you made a very good point about, you know, how important it is for an institution like this to get out into the field, and I would encourage that more. And maybe every 2 or 3 years, the Citizens Board will have a really hot, controversial issue like we had in Dakota County back in the 90s. And at that point, we asked the Citizens Board to come to a special evening hearing to hear from the citizens who were affected by that, and the Citizens Board did come. So I hope that when there is a contentious issue, whether it's in the immediate core cities or the suburbs or anywhere in the state, that the Citizens Board will consider having once in a while. I think it would be quite costly to do this all the time, but when there's a really very, very contentious issue, to come out into the community and have a field hearing. But and there might be some tweaks here and there in terms of how the board conducts its business. But on the whole, this is an important institution. We shouldn't be gutting it, and I would encourage a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Purcell, you indicated that farmers don't know, they knew how to farm a lot better back in your day than they do today. I would like to compare the yields anytime and compare the safety of the products that we produce. I'm proud of the things we do on our farms today. We do it well. As far as the EIS versus EAW, I don't know if we want to take any time here today to explore the differences between those and the cost of doing an EIS, Mr. Chair, but it's a very expensive process.
Representative Torkelson, if you want to get into that, you're certainly welcome. You're a member of the committee. Representative Torkelson.
Well, I will forego bringing the agency down. I'll just say that you know, we do an EIS when it's an unusual situation, when it's something that's beyond what we've done in the past. This is not the first big dairy in the state of Minnesota, and I don't believe that forcing this particular permittee to explore an EIS was warranted by the cost.
Well, thank you, Representative Torkelson, and I think this has been a very interesting discussion, and I don't have anybody left except for Representative Fabian. I'm sorry, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this has been a good discussion, and we've had viewpoints from across the board. It's interesting, as we move from issue to issue, that you see different people maybe saying different, or the same people saying different things, and you have different alliances on different bills. You know, I was intrigued by the Farmers Union, you know, their comments opposing this bill, and thinking back to the buffer discussion a couple nights ago, where, Mr. Chair, you said if the farm groups have got concerns, we've got to throw on the brakes and listen to those concerns. But we're not going to throw on the brakes here tonight. We're going to, I'm sure, pass this out of here on a bipartisan basis. And just because it's bipartisan doesn't make it right. This is a centerpiece of the new majority's agenda. And I, too, heard about this, you know, starting last fall. This became a cause celeb as it happened. The rolling communication of this crisis that was occurred by a decision with the dairy, I think, resulted in this legislation. And we are going to move, this committee is going to move forward a fundamental change in how we're doing things in the state. And it's not something it's not something that I think the Minnesotans are asking for. I think we heard regular folks, and I appreciate the chair giving the folks that drove in having the time to make their points, because I think we should listen to those points and listen to all the points that were made here today. But this change, which goes towards kind of the comments I've made earlier, we are changing the Citizens Board into another stakeholder board. We're changing it into having folks represent industries, even those may be industries that we share affinity with or interest in. But we're moving in that direction, as are many other bills in this legislative session. I think Representative Purcell made a great point that public input in the process, and I think we've heard the Pollution Control Agency Commissioner talk about this earlier, of having citizen involvement is important. So in an either-or case, that's where we're at. This bill moves it earlier but takes it away at the end. And I think Minnesotans are
losing some faith in their government, that they don't have a voice, and unfortunately are going to look at this legislation as an example of that, where it's changing their voice. And although there have been many comments about we're not getting rid of the Citizens Board, I don't think anybody said we were going to, that this bill was getting rid of the Citizens Board. But it's changing its role dramatically, and that should be opposed.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Members, what I did want to say, and Representative Johnson, thank you for the comments, because I had kind of forgotten about my visit, and I believe Representative Torkelson, you were with me when we visited the farm Representative Johnson, when you talked about the Davis's farm down in your area. That was a very unique experience for me. My experience of dairy farms was more like Kevin Chamberlain's 60-cow organic dairy farm, or Bill Sorge's 3,400, one of what we think of as a large farm in Dakota County dairy farm. But I was really amazed to see what the Davis family was doing down there, where they had a carousel and they were milking cows, and there was no odor anywhere. There was no runoff. They actually, all of the was controlled, the hard surface took all the runoff, and they actually went into a lagoon. And if I remember correctly, Representative Torkelson, correct me if I say it wrong, it was covered. There was no odor. And the reason I got to know these folks and meet them is because they were trying to deal with the EPA requirements on, for lack of a better term, their John Deere engines that were running on cow. We use a four-letter word back at home, but it was cow manure it was running on to run this big John Deere engine to create green energy. And they were able to do that because they milked thousands of cows. As cool an operation as Bill Sorg has got, and he's out there every morning, day or night, early morning, late at night, they're able to do this because of that. It's a big operation. No smell, no odor, no runoff. And you know, they inject the manure in the ground so it doesn't run off. That's some of the things they do at this, at the farm you're talking about. But you also talk probably about the coolest thing they have, and I have no idea how much these rooms all cost, but they actually got a veterinarian school. The kids from the St. Paul campus go there, and the Davis family provides them, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm saying it wrong, I'll get it corrected to everybody, free of charge, all those rooms that overlook the parlor. It's an amazing thing that a family like that can do, dedicated to the state of Minnesota. And I don't think we should judge people. And Representative Purcell, thank you, Representative Torkelson, for taking offense at some. I'm sorry, in the case of the smell of money at the Davis family, there's no smell of that money. No, it doesn't smell. No, it doesn't smell at all. It only smells of success. And I'm sorry, Kevin Chamberlain is a really cool guy. Bill Sorg is a really cool guy. And the Davis family, I can't remember their first names. I'm assuming they're really cool too. I don't know them personally, but I don't want to judge somebody by the size you are. I've never been a fan of that. I was a small landscape contractor, and I hope people didn't take offense at that. Representative Fabian, you got the last comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, members, for a good debate on the bill. And let me start out by saying, you know, I respect the division of opinions with regards to my bill. And I don't, you know, as I told Minority Leader Thiessen one day, we were at an event together, I don't ever want anybody in this body to think that I don't respect them and their opinions. It's very important to me that we do that, and we do it respectfully. You know that I'm on the House floor. I'm not into a lot of the shenanigans or whatever that goes on. It's not my style. I do want to clear up a couple of things. And, you know, I really, and I said this morning, for me, when I started on this stuff, this had nothing to do with the dairy, okay? And I told that to Representative Purcell in the hallway earlier today. For me, this was about making a change, a structural change, to the agency that I think in many cases on page 4 of the bill lays out a tremendous number of things that that the board is still allowed to do. Many of the emails, or some of the emails that I received from people, and I don't know where it came from, but it stated incorrectly that my bill, 1394, was going to abolish the Citizens Board. It had nothing to do with abolishing the Citizens Board. Was it changing the function of the board? Absolutely, yes it was. And I've stated then earlier why I thought that that was a good thing to do. One of the other things that that I want members to take a look at is the letter that came from a former board member that's in your packet. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I don't have it right here. Don, this is, we had a couple of other names here today that were a little difficult. Sobosinski, did I do that right? Pretty close? Okay. Don Schiefen. Schiefelbein, okay, Don Schiefelbein, and I'd like you to read that letter and see what he says about the MPCA board and the decision that. And again, this didn't start out as my thing as the decision that the board made on the dairy. That wasn't my motivation, but I think that it's a pretty powerful letter, members, and I would like you to read that and see what he says about the decision made by the board regarding the Riverview Dairy. The other thing I want to mention with regards to the decision by the board of the Riverview Dairy, when MPCA staff told me that the decision that the board made in the setting that they were in, they told me that the board was under tremendous pressure to make a decision that pleased the people who were in the room and who had brought this forward. And I said, you know, I get that to a certain degree, but I can't let that go without telling you about my life experiences about being at a school board meeting in a small rural school, sitting in the high school gymnasium because there's, what, 150 people there? And you've got five friends and neighbors sitting at a table who are going to be making a decision regarding whatever it is, and there's 150 people sitting up in the bleachers, and they don't want their friends and neighbors to make that decision. And you folks know about this too. But somehow or another, they make the decision that they feel is the best thing for them going forward in the future, going against the wishes of their friends and neighbors. And if some people perceive that decision that the board made there as bowing to, I'll say, social or political pressure, I don't think that that's appropriate. Did that have anything to do with my bringing this bill forward? Not one bit. Not one bit. I am looking for ways to make things work better, make things work faster, and be able to keep businesses here in the state of Minnesota and looking to hire more people and to create more jobs and to do good things through Precision Ag. I understand we've made a lot of advances in the state of Minnesota. Representative Johnson, we grew up in Fargo. What was the smell of money back in the 70s and the 60s in Fargo? The sugar beet plant in Moorhead, right? Okay? It was horrible. I mean, it was bad. But you go down there today, and you don't smell that. And so we have made advances, and I admit that. When I first started campaigning in 2010, I was over in a little town of Lancaster, Minnesota. Had a big dairy operation just a mile west of town. It's closed now. I don't know what the market's like, but it's closed now. They had 1,000 cows out there. And you went out there, and that place was as clean as you could imagine. I went into town on the west edge of town, and I'm knocking on doors, and I just kind of wanted to get a pulse for what was going on in the community with regards to the dairy. And I asked them flat out, so what's it like with the dairy being, you know, just a mile west of town? People told me door after door, we don't hardly even ever know it's there. So I didn't want this dairy thing to become the issue on this bill. I truly didn't. And I think it's a good bill. I've told Representative Poppy that there's a couple of one little tiny thing in there that she's uncomfortable with or uncertain about. I'm willing to work with people on these things as they move forward. So With that, Mr. Chair, I would respectfully ask for a yes vote on House File 1394.
Representative Fabian renews his motion that House File 1394 be passed and moved on to government operations. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara.
Yes.
Clark.
Hill.
Cornish.
Aye.
Dill.
Yep.
Fabian.
Yes.
Fenton.
Yes.
Fisher.
No.
Green.
Yes.
Hackbarth.
Aye.
Hancock.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Houseman.
No.
Heinzman.
Yes.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson.
Nay.
Neuberger.
Yes.
Purcell.
No.
Poppy.
Yes.
Rarick.
Yes.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglem.
Yes.
There being 14 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is passed. Move on to GovOps. Members were adjourned until 8:15 Tuesday morning.